This meeting is now being recorded.
Are back in session, so to speak, and we are continuing our discussion about the IMF. I'm going to turn it over to Sherry to introduce the next topic and some of the guests that we have with us.
Okay, great. If you look at page 161 in your materials, you'll see that the on line 26, the telecommunications support is the line that changes our IMF fund balance most significantly, and also in the materials that were handed out this morning. I don't think these are paginated, but it's attachment 4A2 revision 2. And again, if you look at line 26, you'll see now there are four scenarios that change our IMF fund balance. And so the big 800-pound gorilla, shall we say, Mark, is the land west.
Los Angeles, Sherry.
Okay, yeah. That too. We will, the land WAN is the one area that does have a vacillating effect on, or has previously had a vacillating effect on the IMF funding. And so I think, Mark, you have worked with others. I'll let you introduce your panel, but you have some proposals on different ways that we could look at funding land WAN, right?
Yes.
Okay,
we do.
Great.
So thank you. And just a reminder to the committee that we were asked last year by this group to work with in the JCIT group and with the IT managers forum to look at ways to smooth the fluctuations in this budget. And just a reminder, the fluctuations are really due to the refresh of equipment portion of this particular program, which is the largest portion of the program. And again, that refreshment occurs when the vendor no longer supports a particular piece of equipment. And those things are predicted and scheduled into our budget projections. And so as most of you know and saw, beginning several years ago, we projected a very big blip increase in this particular budget for next year. And so what you asked us to do is to go back and look at ways that we could smooth that process. So Michael Durham, who many of you have heard in the past, but has recently taken over Kyle Nishimura's position as senior manager over our infrastructure group, is going to walk you through that presentation and introduce our guests.
Well, good afternoon, everybody. As Mark said, I'm Michael Durham with the Judicial Council's Information Technology Office. And joining us today in person is Heather Pettit from the Contra Costa Superior Court, Juan Giancarlo Esposito from YOLO, and on the phone I've also got Kaki Cohn and Leonard Kwok, who are with the Judicial Council and have a significant amount of background with the land WAN and telecommunications program. Robert O. Young is also joining us on the phone from the Santa Clara Superior Court. And we're here today to review the telecommunications program budget and, as Mark indicated as well, options to smooth or level a projected spike that we're anticipating in the fiscal year 16-17 range. So as part of today's discussion, we'll provide a brief overview of the program, what it provides to the court, and background on the issues that we're working to overcome and the options that we've identified to help address these issues. So as far as an overview of the program goes, the program was initiated in 2001. It was originally charged with providing trial courts with the infrastructure required to physically separate court networks from their county partners. The program provided courts with a standardized network infrastructure and the means to maintain that infrastructure on an ongoing basis. At its core today, the program provides for the implementation of new network hardware as it comes out from the manufacturer and it needs to be installed at the court. It provides for the ongoing maintenance and support of that hardware, and it provides access to technical support resources to court staff and also the replacement of hardware in the event of a failure. The program also provides replacement or the refresh of this hardware on a scheduled basis as it reaches the end of the manufacturer's support periods. And it also provides a means for courts to dispose of this hardware at end of life and obtain traded credits for doing so. And that's important because a lot of times technology hardware can be hard to dispose of. It's not uncommon to have to pay money to get rid of hardware. However, if we refresh on schedule before it becomes end of life, we're typically able to get a credit as opposed to having to pay for the ability to dispose of the equipment. On the day-to-day operations side, this program also provides security monitoring services for the courts, intrusion detection and prevention, things that help keep your network secure. And it also provides training for court IT staff to help them administer and maintain the infrastructure. I'd like to go over a couple of the guiding principles of the program real briefly. Probably in the forefront is that it provides the ability for all courts to fully and equitably participate in the program. It maintains a standardized infrastructure, as I said earlier, and it works to reduce cost, complexity, and administrative overhead by standardizing on a single hardware platform and consolidating under a single managed service provider. The more different platforms you work with, and the more vendors and service providers you work with, the more complex it gets, the more your costs go up, and we've really worked hard over the years to try to simplify it and net it out to the most efficient model possible. Okay. As far as our budget challenges, what we're here today to talk about, the program expenditures typically vary year by year because different amounts of our infrastructure reach end of life in any given year. So the manufacturers will schedule when they plan on ending support for any given hardware platform. What we work to do is stay ahead of that cycle and make sure the hardware is replaced before it's actually out of support by the manufacturer. And depending on what schedules they establish, how long they keep a particular model line in service, that can impact how much comes due in any particular year. And for instance, in the fiscal year 16-17 timeframe, we have a large amount of equipment that requires replacement, which would push our anticipated expenditures up to $29 million. So this has created the need to identify options to level or smooth the program budget on a year-over-year basis and to do so in a manner that's reasonable and acceptable to the courts. To address the issue, we worked with our vendor and our managed service provider and also with the court IT manager forum, and we looked at a variety of factors in this process, including the manufacturer's published schedule on which the support for any given piece of equipment will end, the risks associated with keeping equipment in service beyond the manufacturer's end of support, alternatives to the replacement of the equipment, including perhaps finding third-party maintenance support agreements that would support equipment that the manufacturers no longer would, and also service-based options that rather than spend a lot of money up front on hardware and then less money ongoing to maintain it, that you know, the service provider owns the hardware, and we pay a steady fee year over year. And that doesn't necessarily save us money, but it does serve to shift the expenses around so that they're more predictable year over year. So as a result of these efforts, we've identified three potential options, and I want to be upfront that there are trade-offs with each of them. You know, the primary focus we had on these discussions was addressing the budget issues, but as you see, as we go through, we tried to keep an eye for what would present the least risk for the courts. And also, before we discuss any further, I'd really like to clarify terms like end of life and end of support. You'll hear different talk from different people about these subjects. There's a lot of different terms. End of sale is also another term. And what we're focused on is not when the manufacturer stops selling a particular item, but when they stop supporting it. And by supporting it, that means they no longer stock spare parts if you need a repair. They no longer stock replacements if you have to do a warranty swap. And in fact, in most cases, these products are supported well past the original warranty. We're talking this extended support period in the focus of today's discussion. When a product reaches end of support, that means they're no longer producing operating system updates or security updates for it either. So if there's new threats that come about that we need to protect ourselves against, outdated hardware will not be able to serve its purpose for us.
So just if I can just interrupt for a minute, the materials related to the various options were sent to you, I believe they were the last set sent to you, and they are item, they're under item 5, and they don't have a page number to them, but they're 5A through...
They're actually under item 4.
Okay. Attachments 5A through 5B?
4E. Item 4, if you look on the table of contents, it provides all the reference points. So the PowerPoint is on page 187?
Yes. But the scenario is combined. Thank you.
Thank you. Also, before we get into the options, I wanted to just let everybody know that all the options leverage the CalNet 3 contract, which provides competitive pricing. So if we go to the slide with option 1, this is the option that was developed first with the idea of how do we rearrange the refresh of hardware so that it gives us the flattest budget possible. And although we can get a relatively flat year-over-year distribution of the budget, it comes with some significant risk. It's, in our mind, not really acceptable to the courts because it could potentially keep up to 536 network switches in service at courts throughout the state, in service for 2 years past the manufacturer's end of support.
Can I actually ask a question?
Absolutely.
Judge Good just brought up something to me earlier. Does everyone know the purpose of the LAN WAN and the switches and what they do? Is everyone comfortable with that concept of what the infrastructure is? Okay, I want to make sure. Okay.
This has been taking a break. Would you like to explain why you targeted $16.1 million as the target amount that you want to use? I think that was a question that somebody whispered to me, is where did you come up with 16.1?
16.1 was the preliminary number. I know the original objective was to find ways to level, but with an eye towards the funds that were available in the IMF, we used that as a starting point, but it doesn't turn out to be an ideal number to work from because it does force a significant number of compromises. But for today's discussion, I think we can still model the different options and the pros and cons. Other questions? Okay. Melanie is just also indicating it was based also on the 15-16 budget allocation that we had received. Okay. So moving on from option 1, deferring support or replacement for 536 devices for 2 years, the next slide talks about option 2, which defers a smaller number of devices for a shorter period of time. By deferring maybe 422 devices for just 1 year, we wouldn't flatten the budget as much, but we would have less risk for the courts. But there still, in my mind, would be a reasonably significant risk. And again, these switches are installed at all different points within each court, in the data centers, in the wiring closets that connect the workstations to the server rooms and handle the transmission of all the court's communications back and forth.
So I don't want to get too technical, but could you give us your perspective on a switch failure? In other words, we hear in the news, you know, I don't know, somebody was offline all day today because a switch failed. So when we talk about a switch failure here,
yes,
how would that impact the court statewide?
If it's a switch failure in a wiring closet, a section of the court would be out of service and unable to communicate with systems or work.
I can give you an example happening in real time. In Ventura, there was a power outage for some reason, and what it did was it knocked out the power switches that go to do the air conditioning into our closets. The whole chassis burned. It's fried. Our third and fourth floors of our four-story main courthouse in Ventura have lost all their network and telephone communication. So we've been on the phone with Cisco since yesterday. They had a fly-in. We'll get another talk about support services, but we had to pay $1,500 to get four-hour delivery of equipment in. I'm waiting to get word now whether we're up and running. So I've got two floors. That's 10 courtrooms, completely out of business so far today because of the switch. Now, that switch went out, but that's the impact of losing, for us, the impact of losing that. Today.
It's significant. And if it's a central switch within the data center that everything goes through, the entire court operations could be down.
That was my question, and again, it will exemplify my ignorance on the system, but I would assume that there are switches that are so high up in the system that if that switch fails, it's a statewide implication as far as the system goes.
Court-wide, because the switches distribute within the court, and then there's routers that transfer data in between courts and to the technology center. But yeah, we're
right, court.
Yep.
So we're talking about switches that are in each court, not in
correct.
The tech center.
Correct. Any other questions before we move on to option three?
Yes. I'm technologically challenged a bit, though. Bear with me. So if the courts in options one and two are not getting a security patches, bug fixes, which to me just I'm like, why would we even talk about it? But what happens if there is no support from the manufacturer? What happens if something goes down? What would they be left with? What options would they be left with for repairing or doing whatever?
The option really comes down to obtaining newer equipment, not a like-for-like replacement. So in the case of Ventura, by having the support in place up front, they've got expedited access to this. There's still an impact to the court. But without that, you have to take what the manufacturer has currently available. It may or may not be a direct plug-in, and then you may have some more integration or engineering work to be able to bring things back online. So it really becomes a challenge. Yes?
The program total for option one and two is the same. It's $77.9 million. What option three?
Okay, go back up. That may be an older version of the deck. Option one is 77.9. Okay. Yes, it is. And so if I go back here. They're quite similar. There is a slight difference, though, and you're correct in catching the error.
No, I'm not even saying that. I don't know if there's an error. My question was completely different.
Okay.
I was guessing that what you were doing was just spreading the cost differently by deferring 2 years versus 1 year, but then the out years, years 3, 4, and 5, are also differently affected. So on option 1 and 2, what's the difference in the out years? I see what you're doing in year 1 and year 2. Why do the numbers change to 3, 4, and 5?
The option in the out years, they're changing because of the way the equipment is distributed across the refresh cycle. Khaki, are you online to talk about some of the more specifics of the option? Did you hear the question?
Yes, okay. Yes I did. And you know what? There's actually it looks like there's some cut and paste with scenario 1 and 2. If you move down a couple more slides, you'll see the summary with the actual option 1, 2, and 3 numbers side by side. That might be a little more helpful for folks. And you can see how the numbers balance out a little bit more. But the rationale with the out years, the fiscal year 17, 18, and 19, those numbers being different, it's simply because the need was to replace those devices as quickly as possible, and we did not have as much information about other devices that would be end of support in those later years from Cisco yet. They usually announce their end of support 4 to 5 years out, but we don't necessarily know everything. So we're anticipating certain devices based on their age, but we don't know that for sure. So that's kind of how the numbers change over the later years.
So can I clarify something for Judge Good? Judge Good, I think there's a typo on page 8. I think if you look to page 12 of the PowerPoint, you'll see how the numbers are different. On page 8 and 9, they're identical. Yeah, that page that's up on the screen.
No, I'm looking at 12.
Okay, good.
But even 12, I guess I just don't understand, because I'm trying to follow what you're saying. You're saying defer 2 years, defer 1 year, so I would expect that would change the expenditures in year one and two. But, for example, in year three, you have one option at 16 and another at 18, and then year four, one option at 13 and the other at 9. I'm trying to figure out that these just deferring 1 year or 2 years would change the outcomes. I'm missing something, I'm sure.
So if I'm not mistaken, when they originally look at these numbers here, the fourth year here, that's 9.8, what that is referring to is the original number if we would have put all of our eggs and did the full expenditures in the big expenditure year. So what they're doing is they are actually putting offloading that in option two in 2 years versus it being. So this, to me, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, it was the 9.8 was close to what the original estimate would have been scenario one here if we would have stuck with the original. What was it, $23 million or whatever?
Right.
I don't remember that exact number, but I think that's why. So that would have been our amount, is what it should have been.
Why wouldn't it be the same in the first option?
Because what we're doing is they're deferring even more. So they wanted to flatten it as much as they possibly could. So we're actually waiting even longer to replace it, which is why it would be the $13 million. So you could potentially have switches that have expired for 2 years waiting and waiting and waiting to get it replaced to year four, where here they're trying to get it all replaced in those first couple of years.
Right. So the typo, go ahead, Sherry.
Oh, and I was just going to say, when you replace switches, do we not keep some of them for quick swap out?
That can be done, but by and large, it's important to get them off to the manufacturer again for the trade-in credits. Because the longer you keep the idle equipment, the more those credits evaporate,
sure.
And that can represent 4 to 5% of your cost. And then for those that are looking at the materials that were distributed last week, the typo I'll try to go over, the correct numbers are behind you, but in option one where we defer the most, it's roughly a $16.1 million spend for each of the next 3 years. But if we defer less of the switches for a shorter period, in 16-17, instead of a $16 million expenditure, it jumps to $18 million. In the following year, it also jumps to $18 million. And then further down the road, because we've replaced that hardware more quickly than an option one, we actually have a dip down to about $9 million. So it's a little spikier, but again, to the point of the security risks, that led us towards other options as being more viable. And if we can move to option three, this introduces lease financing as an option to flatten the budget. And it represents the least risk to the courts from a technology and a security perspective, but it's at the expense of incurring financing charges. Historically, this program has not leased or financed equipment. We've paid for it outright up front since we know we're going to have it for the entire lifetime of the product. However, the executive branch does, in certain cases, lease equipment. In review with the court IT managers, we also know that the trial courts lease equipment in different scenarios as well. So to us, it represents a reasonable means to help address the issue. It spreads the payments around, but lets us bring the equipment in on time. So, other questions?
I guess at some point we'll go through the numbers, but on the lease option, that we can get to the numbers first. I was going to ask you what things you were looking at leasing versus purchasing, if it was a straight-out lease, if you had some options to buy at the end. You know, so we can wait until we get to the numbers.
Sure. Actually, we can dive into some of that right now.
Okay.
And option three, for the lease financing, what we would project is a one-time lease event in FY 16-17. That's where we have the spike. Potentially a $10 million lease amount, which is roughly the cost of the switches that would otherwise have to be deferred. The financing rates are subject to change. We got the Fed meeting next week, but currently it looks like we can get right around a 2% rate. A three-year term and a $1 buyout would roughly put maybe a $50,000 charge for every $1 million spent per year to be able to finance. So generally, by spending maybe a couple of percent on finance charges, it enables us to continue participating in the trade-in program at 3 to 4%, which, yeah, it's not as much money as if we'd own the equipment outright, but still it helps enable an overall savings.
So it's a one-time lease with the buyback, and then is the thought that we would get the equipment at a point where we would be replacing about the same amount every year? Would you continue that lease option until we were phased so that we could start paying for it ourselves? Is that what the ultimate goal would be?
I would like to see a program where we do pay for it directly without the financing. The things that we can do is, as we refresh moving forward, is keep an eye more towards the phasing of these deployments to where maybe we replace some of it just a little bit early versus all of it completely on time, so that every year we're always replacing something. But if we're spending on a flatter basis and they're retiring at the manufacturer support side on a fairly regular basis, we shouldn't get everything clumped into 1 year. And one of the things that gets us into that predicament, besides the manufacturer saying we're going to suspend support for this, this, and this, is if on our side we come into a windfall of money and say, okay, let's go and do a widespread revamp of the networking infrastructure. Down the road, 5, 6, 7 years, it's all going to come due at the same time also. So our eye is to try to meter the implementation and the refresh of this equipment. And that's a discussion that came up with the Court IT Managers Forum as well. You know, if we have all of this type of router coming due at this particular time, what can we do? You know, they don't always come out with a new router version every single year, but as long as, like I said before, we can meter the way we deploy and phase it a little better, I think we can address.
So I want to clarify, though, to be more blunt than Michael is being, that we've looked at ways to smooth the budget. There is no way for us to predict when a vendor will end of service a particular set of equipment. So even if you pre-bought stuff to smooth things out, so you had a more equal number of equipment items expiring each year, it could be changed in an instant by the vendor saying, you know, we're going to end of life this equipment in 3 years rather than 5 years or 7 years. So there's never going to be a perfectly flat budget. And also to address Sherry's question more directly, this is a one-time leasing, not something we would look at moving forward with unless we had another large spike. So I think at the end of this presentation, what we would like to see us moving towards is a place where this budget is more sustainable without these spikes, and that there's a more stable source of funding, so we don't have to come back and forth and do this and explain and take these cuts and make deferrals, because they just catch up with you. And we're going to talk about some of the other programs that are like that as well.
I think Rick had a question, and then Judge Dunn-Smith.
Okay. So the $10 million lease figure that you have there, is that strictly based upon the APR, or how do they go about developing that?
Cisco has a financing arm, you know, to help with customers, and we sat down with their rep, and you know, with based on the $10 million figure as the value of those switches, they gave us preliminary rates, and says depending on how things shape up, you know, they may be able to be a little more competitive, they may not. This, like I say, it all might change a little bit if the Fed raises rates too. But yeah, that came from that scenario and working with real numbers.
Is this through some sort of statewide, state of California program? Purchasing program, or is this just what they offer to private
sector? This is part of a statewide program that other government agencies take advantage of. And they provided examples in the executive branch, too, where the same program was used at a relatively large scale.
Judge Smith?
Yeah, I just had a quick question about switch technology. Is there anything on the horizon that would cause any concern about any of these plans? You know, I mean, I don't know anything about it, but I don't know if there may be some major change that would cause, the companies to cause the end of life of something because there's some new thing that's happening in the area.
There's a couple of things. One, the technology itself is stable. If anything, you may wind up with different manufacturers jockeying for position as the leading provider of that equipment. As far as the technology being superseded, that's just not a significant risk here. But what is a risk is as technology advances and we talk about putting more things into the cloud, that's going to require higher rates of data transfer, which in turn translates to more robust equipment, which in turn translates to increased costs. So would our investment in this equipment be protected and we'd be able to continue using it without risk of it being subverted by something else that comes to market? Most likely. But we may outgrow it.
I have Judge Buckley and then Judge Good.
So the $10 million, I mean, the only one in the room that's struggling. Is the $10 million instead of the $16 million?
No. We would be financing, think of it as the $22.5 million that we were originally projecting because of the one spike. What we're doing is taking what otherwise couldn't be afforded that's due, and that allows us to reduce that higher budget down to something in the range of $16 million, but then we have payments in the next couple of out years to help repay that.
So we're refreshing roughly $60 million and we're leasing $10 million?
No. It would be a $10 million purchase for switches that year. And at a 2% rate financed over roughly 3 years, we can run the numbers, but let me give you a round number of $50,000 per $1 million financed. So you could conceivably be spending several hundred thousand dollars on
we're purchasing some and leasing the rest.
Right.
But if
we stay at that $16 million.
Correct.
Right. And
everything is refreshed when it's supposed to. We're not placing any 1 year or 2 years
away.
That's exactly right. And I do want to stress that the leasing and the financing options are still preliminary. We've had general discussions about the concept, but we still need to run specific lists of hardware and get the amortization and all that so we can speak more authoritatively. But as a general principle, the concepts seem to be working in our favor.
But if you leased everything for the $16 million less,
I don't think there'd be a benefit to leasing everything, because to the degree that we can afford to purchase it ourselves and avoid the finance charges, it's in our benefit.
Judge Good and then Judge Conklin.
So I start with the same question that Judge Buckley had. Did you start with the 16.1 and then say, if we lease 10 million, then we can afford to buy six? I mean, what was the process? If you wanted to get the number below 16, if you leased more, would you get the number below 16?
I don't know that the number would really appreciably go in that direction. Khaki, do you want to provide any more insight? Did you hear the question?
It was cutting in and out, so can you repeat it just so I can make sure I got it?
The question is, since we are basing off of initial figure of $16 million, what if we financed more? Could we get the number below $16 million?
Yeah, we could get the number below $16 million. We could refinance it for 5 years as well. So there's a number of options that we could do to drop that price lower. It does not cut down the total number of dollars that we would spend, of course, over time. It just spreads out the dollars over time. Well, we did model it, the $10 million and various other amounts for 3 years and 5 years. Cisco is very flexible with their finance model, so we can pick any term that would work for us.
That's good.
Yeah, the other question I had is this, and it's sort of to cover what Judge Conklin said. It sounds like there are switches that are really important.
Correct.
The whole court. And then there's switches like what Mike had, where they're important to 10 court rooms.
Correct.
Have you triaged expenditures to take greater risk with respect to the second category and less risk with respect to the first category?
Yes. We prioritize support or maintain uplifted support coverage for the more critical components, and then the outlying components would have a lower degree of support, but yet the ability to provide the replacements when needed. But yes, that is prioritized.
So actually, from a trial court perspective, I actually offer an opinion on that. In the world of the trial courts, in my mind, is that it doesn't matter if it's 10 courtrooms that are down or a whole courthouse is down. You guys need to be up and running and be able to effectively do your job. So if it's critical to operations, it's something that we have to be able to get fixed immediately and as quickly as possible, because you wouldn't be able to work. And that, to me, is a problem.
Yeah, the cost might be greater by not.
Right. I mean,
that's true. I add up with that.
Exactly.
Judge Conklin?
I'm wondering why you have a very convincing description of the advantages of leasing and all the advantages it provides. So why aren't we moving that toward the entire system? Because then you just said you'd recommend that we only lease part and buy the rest, but if it's that advantageous to lease, or is that beyond the discussion of this?
No. Leasing is a viable option to solve the issue that we're in. My first choice would be to purchase the equipment outright. Avoid the finance charge.
Outright, then don't we get back into your concerns about end-of-life scenarios and the vendor being able to sort of keep us hostage, so to speak, by saying, well, guess what? Today it's now 3 years instead of five, and sorry about the money you spent on that.
Right. Although the vendors generally keep an extended period of life for this equipment, especially in the networking arena, you can get 5, 6, 7 years with the more critical hardware. So they do tend to go out of their way to maintain the stable infrastructure over time. Judge Slough?
So I guess the question that I hear kind of being framed is, what is, other than the financing piece, what is the disadvantage of being of a full-on lease?
The disadvantages of the full-on lease would be the carrying charges, which is what you said. But other than that, if you lease for too long of a period of time, it could be that your payments take you too far out and start getting in the way of future budget years. You know, akin to maybe leasing a car too long, where the value is depreciating faster than your equity in the car. So, in my mind, since we know we're going to keep the equipment for the entire lifespan of the equipment, first choice is to own it outright. And then, if the budget realities cause you to have to find ways to shift the money around from budget year to budget year, then potentially evaluate leasing or financing as an option.
I think it provides us more flexibility that where we can purchase with the budget and the revenues that are available. As Michael said, then this lease option is something that then could be used when and if, you know, there is that need that it is available. Because you're not paying for any additional interest on it, and you still get the support from the system because we're replacing on a regular cycle.
Yes.
This is Jim Herman. Just an added piece from what I'm seeing further down in the PowerPoint, and based on the risk analysis of 1 and 2, you seem to think it would also align better with the data security risks that the state auditor pointed out.
Correct. Option 3 would align better with that because we would have up-to-date infrastructure. And then Judge Earl had a question here in the room.
So for purposes of option 3 and the example that you've given, what percentages of the switches would be covered under the lease agreement that you're using as example in option 3?
Percentage I couldn't tell you without looking for more data. The numbers would be all the switches that were previously discussed in options 1 and 2.
500+.
Okay, Michael, I could actually tell you that this is about one-third of the total switches that would be out at all 58 courts.
Okay. Yeah, Sherry?
We're going to meet again in February. One of the scenarios I would be really interested in for this option is the ultimate goal. If the preference is to own them, it seems to me the ultimate goal would be to find a lease option that would allow you to replace enough so that the cycle would sustain itself with the buy-only option. And as you mentioned, some might be replaced sooner than their life cycle just to make sure that we have a platform that we can support in the future rather than these huge vacillating cycles of funding. And I think what we're doing right now is we're just saying we need 544 switches or whatever the magic number is, and we can only afford X, so we're going to finance Y. And what I'm suggesting, one of the options we talk about in February, I'd like to see how it would change if the preference is we want to buy, maybe it would go from 544 to 600. I don't know. I mean, I don't know what it would look like. You'd have to do some projections. But if that's the model we're trying to go to, we need to figure out what it takes to get us there.
Right. Long-term sustainability.
Right.
You're exactly right,
I agree.
Rick.
I agree with that, Sherry, but it seems to me that you don't necessarily at this point always better to go to buy. You really almost have to look at it in terms of what's happening with interest rates, what happens with interest that you would earn, what are your other cash needs, et cetera.
One option. That's why I said one option, because leasing, a lot of businesses and courts too, specifically lease, because sometimes in your contract you get better rates in terms of upgrading enhanced equipment for no additional cost. There's a lot of benefits with leasing equipment that you couldn't otherwise save for, and that has, you know, as Mark said, sometimes they'll say, well, that unit is no longer going to be used. Well, in your contract, they will then start replacing your lease options with the higher model with no increased cost. So I think we need to look at various options, but one of them, if the model is to get to a purchase option, we need to at least smooth it over.
Agreed.
Is that something you could come back in February and have for us?
We can continue working out different models, yes. You know, because like I mentioned earlier, these are preliminary numbers, but I think more diligence is needed to continue modeling out different scenarios to see what is the most advantageous. We mentioned earlier CalNet 3. We mentioned the option of using a managed service model as well, and those are all options that were discussed with the court IT managers. The managed service model differs from the leasing in that the vendor retains ownership of the equipment and we pay a fee to use it, and they manage it and replace it on their nickel. And the numbers that are being put together here, we want to make sure has the appropriate blend of those different options, so that we're spending more of our money on what it takes to run the courts and less of our money on interest to the banks. So, other questions?
One other point I need to make, and as some of you know, the Judicial Council staff agency does not do financing lease. We don't have a precedent. This is something that we've never used. It has not been necessarily precluded, but we don't have a practice. As Michael has pointed out, courts use it, executive branch uses it, local government uses it, but we need internally to be able to discuss this and figure out how, under the existing judicial branch contracting manual, we can do it. We can do it, and we can do it right. So that's another caveat. We need to work with finance to get through that process.
Judge Buckley?
Are you done most of the slides?
There's a couple more slides, but I'm open for questions.
No, my question is about a subsequent slide. So
okay.
And I think David Yamasaki had a question.
And it may be covered in the next slide. One of the things that I think we find ourselves in right now is need and the lack of resources. This isn't necessarily the first option, because we otherwise would have pulled the trigger on this a long time ago.
Right.
And the lease options right now are appealing. I think that's one of the reasons why we're looking at this. But the only thing I you know, hope we don't overlook is risk. Something that you mentioned is at the end of this lease, you know, we decide not to lease any longer, we're going to have to buy all of this equipment for more than $22 million. So is that a risk that we feel comfortable with, you know, taking, given the options that we have right now?
The lease terms that we would be looking at would be akin to a $1 buyout at the end of the term. So basically you're amortizing the full amount as opposed to having a significant residual value, which if you're leasing for a shorter term at a project that you would tear down infrastructure and turn it back in, we do exactly that. But for the longer term, yeah, we do the $1.
I just have one other question to help me understand. When you're doing your projections on the cost of switches and routers and everything that's part of LANWAN, do you use the market rate costs or do you use the negotiated costs?
We use negotiated costs.
Okay.
We do buy through the leverage procurement agreement, so
and
it's easier
to forecast. And that's the cost. So when we're looking at these figures, it's not the market rate, it's actually the negotiated rate.
Correct. Okay.
But do we not get volume discounts based upon the amount that we get purchased as well?
That's mostly defined by CalNet, but yes, to the degree that we can bulk our purchases, we can drive the better discounts. CalNet 3 is heavily discounted.
Sure. So in other words, there would be potentially discounts from the cost that we're projecting today because we're not there yet and we don't know what the bulk discounts will be?
I'd be reluctant to say that. I would say that the discounts are factored in there pretty well.
Okay. Judge Goodson? On your line 3 down there, where it goes from 16 to 14, what drives the reduced numbers in the out years? Could those be used up a year or two? Could you read?
Leveling that, it becomes difficult because there are some products that the manufacturer has not yet announced an official end of support or end of life date for. So you can usually forecast 2 to 3 years out pretty reliably and 4 to 5 years somewhat reliably, but beyond that, it's a rough estimate. So with the knowledge that we have today and the end of life schedule that we have today, I think that is as reasonable as we can project. Trying to slide things around to flatten it out even further, I think would wind up replacing equipment prematurely or keeping it in service too long. Yes.
Does that number, the difference that just Good was just talking about, does that have to do with the variance between where courts are and the survey you did of all of us? So, because I'm thinking of our own situation where we might not need any switches replaced in 18, but we
right.
need them in 19. So are there more of us in 19 and fewer? Is it kind of where the courts are in their replacement
cycle?
Yeah,
it does. It varies based on that particular product and so forth. I want to give you a little extra background. I know we're running up on time, but the process to go through this, the telecommunications program team sat down and looked at the network diagrams for all the courts and identified all the equipment by model number, and then based on that, matched it up with the manufacturer's end of support dates. And they built a pretty large matrix of this is our total hardware footprint, and this one it becomes end of life, and put it out into pivot tables to stretch it out and see. That's what we came up with. And then we started modeling from there. Okay. What I'd like to do is move on to the next slide about the summaries of the effectiveness and the financial models. But we've already talked about a lot of this, but this slide in your packet summarizes the different options and shows basically at a high level which seems to have the best blend of risk and ability to resolve the problem. And then the next slide after that provides a financial summary of the three different options, this time all in one slide, so it's easy to take a look at. So next slide is what we did with the Court IT Managers Forum. And we've already talked some about this, but I wanted to stress that in working with the Court IT Managers Forum, they were very responsive in working with us. We had a series of meetings over several months. It's not always easy to find time under schedules. They made time for it. There was a strong consensus that we should maintain a single vendor, single managed service provider model, depending on which options we push for under CalNet 3 to address our budgeting issues. We would have the risk of losing that. So we're continuing to work together to try to hold on to that principle. There was a strong agreement that we cannot afford to entertain options that keep equipment in service after the end of the manufacturer's support. And it was iterated to us what the impact was. And I know, Mike, when you talked, you underscored every one of those principles. The impact of a failure to a court is high and, can result in not just phone systems or case management systems being down, but also the ability to talk to partners, DMV, DOJ, court security systems may be down, and so on and so forth.
The next slide shows another real-life example besides what Ventura is encountering, but Contra Costa just in November as well. And this program doesn't prevent these types of issues, but it helps our ability to manage them and recover from them. So if we can move forward, there's the request slide.
Going back to
yes, Judge Buckley.
The group of the, yeah, did they ever thought or did they even ask about the leasing situation?
Actually, it was something that they brought to us, and it was helpful to have that discussion.
Yeah, it was actually our recommendation. We've done, many of the CIOs have done lease options within each court, so the buyback and many, you know, scenarios are you lease for 3 years, get a support and maintenance agreement for 5 years, so you are, you know, your replacement cycle. Our biggest concerns were that, one, you guys gave a budget number we had to hit, and so in order to do that and maintain services, really the only way effectively to do it was to be able to spread the payments over time, which is what in the trial courts we've had to do because our budgets, we don't have any choices to be able to maintain services. So for us, it was probably the best option. The other benefits of leasing is that if you want to drive a new car always, you always get a new car when you lease. So, I mean, that is the other benefit of it. So as technology is changing, you did ask about the future. There are a lot of changes happening in technology, and that's something that we're going to be exploring in the next generation work stream, which is new virtual type of networking, new things that, you know, these hardware providers are looking at. So this gives us a little bit more flexibility. And I know that it's something that, you know, we have not traditionally done, but if it's something that we can look at, get our return on investment, whether it's through trade-in or a lack of outage, and we can look at the amount of money we've saved, then it's a worthwhile opportunity. And then it allows us to flatten our budget, level it. So now we know what it is, our utility bill every year, because this is our utilities, what we have to pay. And if we're contractually obligated, we do a lease, that money is set aside. It's what you pay for. We know the lights are going to be on for that time period. So it was our recommendation. I don't know, Giancarlo, you have any?
No, you said it all.
Okay. Yes, Judge Schlau.
Did your crew have a recommendation as to the combination of the lease owned, or did you view, you know, leasing all of it was maybe better, or were you of the opinion that doing a combination was probably the best?
The JC came up with the current format. I mean, our recommendation was to look at lease as an option, you know, and they were working with the vendors. I think it really varies. One of the things that's been very, I want to say, we've seen a lot is that we've had a reduction of services. If we incorporate more into a leasing model, then potentially we could reestablish some of the services that have been lacking because of the budget crisis.
You're talking about maintenance services.
Maintenance services, things of that nature. So that was one of the benefits. You know, I think in our mind, we were looking at a straight lease just to flatten it. Again, many of us, like me, like driving a new car, and I want my technology to be up to chops with it. And these case management systems have require huge data sets. They transfer rates, all of these things. So I want to make sure that my systems are well capable of being able to handle those. So for me, you know, I like the idea of having the ability to be agile, quick, get systems replaced, get the newer that's going to accommodate the newest technology. And leasing does allow us to do that. So that was kind of our philosophy. So we didn't have a whole particular model, but we just got these numbers literally. I saw them a couple
of days. I handed them to Heather at the lease.
Yes. So, Rick?
Yeah, I think we need to really look at this more holistically. I mean, 3 or 4 years from now, we might have the money to buy, but we also will need to balance that. Is there better ways to spend it?
Yeah.
It might be on case management systems or other things to save us more money than buying out, than buying and incurring the lease costs. I mean, if we were in the private sector, we would certainly be doing that.
So sure.
I really need to take that point of view. And leasing helps us do that.
Standpoint.
And by contrast, I run my cars to death.
That's an excellent point because I do the same thing. And I don't lease a car because I want to drive it for 10 years. But I can't drive my Switch for 10 years because if it fails at year 4, the family in my car dies. Right? I mean, I'm not trying to be overly dramatic, but the reason
it is pretty dramatic.
Make my mark. The reason is, but if I understand it, if we lease it at the end of the lease term,
we have an option of saying we'll pay you a dollar to keep the equipment.
Correct.
Or at the end of the lease, we say, you know what? We've negotiated the lease to the life of our equipment. We now want our new car, so we're now going to release for another 7 years.
Or something new.
Or something new.
But actually, long-term leases can provide the upgrades at less cost. You can negotiate. The longer the lease, the better for the company. So there's options that that could be considered. I just want to thank you for including the CIOs in this discussion. Heather, thank you. I think you took the lead, but all the CIOs, I think it really helps to have the court and your group work together, because really when you're talking about risk, they're the ones who live with the risk in our court, and so to have them part of the dialogue, I think, is really helpful, so I appreciate you doing that.
Absolutely. It was very helpful to us as well.
Let me ask from our committee members, subcommittee members, as well as our guests, when we meet again in February, what other scenarios would you like to see them present to us besides the one that Sherry suggested, which is the lease option, right?
Total lease. No, total lease. And then my option was lease to get to the model to buy on a sustainable. So those are two options. Rick is the lease everything.
Yep.
To look at it as an option.
Might as well.
Uh-huh.
David?
Well, maybe we can ask the CIOs right now if this scenario is more appealing than the total lease.
I think it's done. I don't know. I mean,
more discussion?
I think we need discussion. Part of it is that when we originally started this process a couple years back, we were looking at some of the architectural, how we actually roll this out. And I think one of the challenges that they have, and I don't envy them, is that looking at how we replace these. So the team that's on the phone, they're going to have to go back, even if we lease and say, we're going to replace this group early, this group, because they've got to regardless, we have to level it out. So how we do that, that's the work right there that has to be done. And we're more than happy to help them, but we won't know it until we see what that's going to look like.
On my side, there's a couple of things I'd like to do. One is at least getting the word out that we do have to look to the future and potentially identify ways to establish a stable and sustainable funding mechanism for this program. In the meantime, yes, we understand the realities of the IMF budget and what we have to work with. And as it pertains to the exercise we're reviewing today, the next steps are to go back, continue to work with the court IT managers, and continue to model the different scenarios. We have preliminary information today. What we need to do is balance out different options and say, is this version of leasing more advantageous than that version of leasing, or what combination or how? So, to date, we've gotten the high-level information together, but we do have to get further down into the weeds so that we can really conclusively say what's in our best interest.
I have Judge Slough and then Judge Good.
I just wanted to just say, this is my third year in sitting in these kinds of meetings, the two prior years as a member of budget and now as chair of Judicial Council Technology. Michael, I want to, and Mark and others, thank you for the evaluation, the inclusiveness, the presentation. I think it is this presentation has, to me, gone the longest in really helping us to understand what our options are. And I do think we have to find that middle way that fits right, that reduces the risk as best it can. And I just want to compliment you guys on the presentation you did on this. I think it was very helpful.
Thank you very much.
That's good.
I agree, it's very helpful. I'd like to see next time a little bit of knowledge. I'm pointed by David's question about what's the downside and what are the risks that we're not thinking about today. Because if you say you get some benefit from trading in equipment, you lose that money. What is the risk when you go off lease? I'd like to really understand what the other side of this equation is, because it looks very shiny now. And I'd like to see what the tarnish is on it.
Understand. No, I agree. Okay. Rob, I know you've been on the phone. Do you have any comments as we close out the subject?
No, I think that everybody made all the main points, so appreciate the opportunity to share the information.
Okay, so thank you, everybody. We'll continue working with court IT managers. Judge Earl?
Thank you. I just wanted to say, Mark, since we have you here, we might want to hack some questions on some of the other IT programs, if that's okay.
I fully expected that, Judge.
Anyone else wants to listen in, Rob or Heather or Chuck Hope? You're welcome to stay. I wanted to, so I'm looking at page 161 of our materials, combined materials. I'm not sure if you have that.
A chart?
Yes.
Yes. Very small.
All right. So if we look at line 23, enterprise policy planning.
Yes.
One of our favorites.
Yes.
If I read this right, the council approved allocation in 2015 was $2.8 million. And the columns on the right under scenario 1, 2, and 3 is that essentially your budget request for the next fiscal for 16-17? I guess my question is, does it go from 2.8 to 8? Oh, and that page 162 has a four-year estimate.
Just see my copy of that. Bear with me. EPP goes to 8.
I guess if I'm correct in interpreting this, that there's an increased funding need in the next few years, I wondered what that was, why, what that would be.
And it fluctuates as well. When you look at this,
so, Judge, the proposal was going from 2.8 to 7.8, and that was related to the fact that in the current budget year, this committee recommended to the council that a good portion of that budget from last year be disencumbered for the Oracle Enterprise License Agreement maintenance. And what we told you is that we could do that. It was a different practice for us. It wasn't how we typically do things contractually, but we did it. But we told you we'd be back and we would need the entire year's budget this year. And so we are back saying we need the entire year's budget. We meant what we said. And plus, I should also point, Melanie reminds me that it really also includes the half of year that we have to make up from last year.
Okay.
Okay, so it's the whole year plus the half of last year that we disencumbered.
And then line 25 for the CCTC?
Yes. It's exactly the same issue. It was disencumbering contractual funds, and this is the new budget. I will point out, however, on CCTC that if you discount the fact that you took away the encumbrances and we need to add that back, it's actually lower. That budget went down, and that was due to the contract, partially due to the contract negotiation with SAIC, the provider.
You recall that in the summer, there was a discussion at council about a renegotiation with SAIC, and that there would be some reduction in the cost. And so these are reflected in here as part of the normal program and the share.
Okay. Jose?
And for those two items, can you explain what is that primarily used for? It is, in reading some material in my recollection during CCMS, was it CTCC and Oracle were kind of the fundamental tool that we were going to deploy to have the infrastructure, that we were going to be developing our own systems, and we're going to have a hosted statewide. And so this kind of put us in that, you know, kind of path. Then CCMS, you know, unfortunately, so is that primarily the fundamental use for Oracle and for CCTC? Are we using all of that to the fullest? And if, for instance, the trial court, are they using the Oracle license?
Yes, Jose, it's a very good question. One of the questions this group, or maybe it was your subcommittee, brought up was about the Oracle Enterprise License Agreement, and we, if you'll remember, you asked us to go talk to Oracle about whether we needed an enterprise agreement or not, and we did. And their reply was, as we expected, because we were paying maintenance. We own the license. Rich owns the licenses in perpetuity. So right now, all we're doing is paying maintenance. It's hefty, but we're paying maintenance. So Oracle's response was, if you don't like the enterprise license agreement, we can cancel that, and you can go purchase new licenses and then pay maintenance on those. And at the time, that was cost prohibitive. We have since had some negotiations with Oracle. They've come back to the table and said, you know, maybe we can work something out. But we're still in the discussion stages with Oracle. On CCTC, as I've explained to you all before, you only pay for what services you get. So that is all those services that come through CCTC are used by the corps today. So we don't pay for anything we don't use. Any other questions, Judge?
I do not. I wondered if anyone had any questions for Mark about any of the IT programs that are funded from the IMF, with a caveat, however. We are going to hold off on our discussion regarding interim case management systems, which is line 24 on page 161. And B3 on line 28, because the branch is pursuing a budget change proposal to cover the costs of B3 for those courts that participate and are working on another one for the interim case management systems, correct?
Yes.
And so we're going to hold off on having a discussion about those particular programs until our February meeting, so we can see what's in the governor's budget and maybe get an update on the what the Department of Finance is thinking. So those are somewhat off the table today, but if you have questions about any of the other IT programs funded out of the IMF, now's your time to ask. No?
I'm always available. You all know how to reach me.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
I'm curious, Lucy, did you find out which...
primarily, you've got the one course with maybe one couple of people.
Do you know how many from within each cluster?
It was seven and two.
Seven in cluster one did not respond?
Correct.
So 50%. And two in cluster two?
Yes.
Any idea, Rebecca, why 50% of the courts in cluster one would not respond to the survey?
I
have. Okay. I was just curious if you heard anything like.
I don't, other than workload and perhaps hands-on knowledge, I think that it.
I didn't hear many of those. I did hear rather poor that it was a time-consuming process.
It was a time-consuming process with. Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Sure.
I just want to make an observation. I don't know what it means, but as I was listening to that, I was hearing in my head Judge Heiberg's presentation about how we run our courts, our construction programs, and the expression he was using, remember, a year or two ago was, we run to failure.
Yes.
And I'm struck by the disconnect, by the way we run our buildings and the way we run our computer systems, where we're dedicated, obviously, to keeping computer systems functioning, and we accept not keeping the building functioning. And somewhere, as an advisory committee, I think we might want to give some thought to the mismatch of resources. And I don't mean to say we should impoverish the computer system in the buildings. It just strikes me as a very, very different model that we're pursuing.
Of course, you know, I think the reason is because the money that comes to the facilities comes from the state. And we don't manage it. So that's, you know, we get a pot of money, $50 million. And so that, I think, is part of it, where we're trying to manage our own money.
I'd be curious to know if general
philosophy is to run the safe buildings.
That's a good point.
Did somebody say yes? Is ridiculous. I mean,
in all safe facilities, Michael?
Yeah. I mean, yes. The thing is, I heard about the capital itself.
But DGS is to run the
safe. It's not their model. It's that the circumstances are such that they are not doing deferred maintenance. So I think the model is that we should be, but the funding and the priorities have not been to fund maintenance of our buildings unless they are fire life safety. And that's what the Department of Finance has been funding in terms of repairs, special repairs at, say, prisons and universities. They get a pot of money, and they want to expand them, and they say prioritize fire life safety. It's not a good way.
No.
It is the way, though.
So should we do so we're going to start to address the, I guess, the survey, unless we have specific questions about any of the programs that would come out of order. So, for example, I will start, Kurt, I hope you don't mind. But Phoenix, I'm looking at page 97, and Phoenix program is rated number 4 as being used by most courts and as being very valuable, and I think that's great because I've always been a supporter of Phoenix Financial. But I am curious why it's going up $2 million this year. So when you look at the page 162 and you look at the 2015 council approved allocation of $12.1 million, and then you look at scenario 1, 2, and so on, it jumps to $14 million. What is going on there?
Probably the
health and benefit cost of the staff who's running it.
Oh, Patrell, do you have some information?
It should actually be
13.885. So it's going up about $1.7 million. Okay. Do we know what the cost increases, Patrell? Do we know what the cost increases are for? Okay.
Do you have an idea,
Olivia,
what that is?
Well, actually, it's not the cost increase. It's actually the reinstatement of the 10% cut that we took. It's just going back to the level that it's supposed to be at.
Okay. So thank you for saying that. You're not going to be happy, but you did remind me of something that was on our principles that was not there. And one of the principles, you're not going to like it that you reminded me, but our principle last year was there would be no increase above the year before. And so I'm wondering if we want to have that same bullet. In other words, if we didn't list it because we held them at the 14-15 level or 15-16, and I'm wondering if the bullet here should be to hold them at the 15-16 level as well. And we made two exceptions. And they were very small exceptions, but there were two exceptions. So I'm throwing that out because
there was no increases.
There was no increases.
The allocation they got the year before.
Right.
I don't know about the principle, but I understand the point is if you look at this chart, the $12 million is the highest amount on the chart for all the prior years. It wasn't a 10% increase. It wasn't a 10% cut. It looked like it was a 10% increase. From
what page are you on? Oh, you must be on page 161.
Well, I'm on the new handout.
Oh, that new handout also. All right. I see, because you're seeing that it jumped from 6 point to 12?
From 10.3 to 12.
I don't think it was ever that low. My recollection is you did take a cut last year, so that makes me question a little bit.
Did you get the expenditures and encumbrances down below? That's the number you talked about?
Yeah, down below here. Yes.
Okay.
What page? I'm sorry, what page? What are we
Let's
looking
at? Let's all be on the same chart.
The new handout, I'll pass it 4A1, revision 2. Handed out a while ago.
Page 1? Yes, first page.
Line.
It is line 36. Yeah, interesting. It must have been a contractual requirement because we did not allow, except for two instances. Remember that, David? Sound familiar? There were only two we allowed to go up beyond the prior year. So, Kurt, do you have any, or does anyone?
Sure, my point is very different. Just
yeah.
What was just said was that it's restoring a 10% cut that was taken last year, bigger than the year before.
Right.
Which is only a 10% cut to me.
Exactly, which made me wonder if they must have asked for more than that, and this is what it got settled on because of some contractual. I don't know contractual reasons.
So our budget.
Yes, do you have it?
I haven't met everybody. My name is Doug Kofroff. I'm the director over TCAT. So. One comment about these expenditure and encumbrances numbers. The first time I saw them this last week, and that's why you got a new handout today, I would also propose that I would like to look at these numbers more because this shows us saving $2 million, and I know that we didn't save $2 million last year. And so we need to look at expenditure and encumbrance numbers more to try to figure out why it's showing $10 million rather than I know we spent more than $12 million. So I apologize for that, but that's what I'm seeing. I think those numbers are less than accurate.
It's possible he was right, but the numbers are from Oracle Systems, and those are through October 31st. And Stephen and I did a very thorough check. It's again possible that the numbers are wrong, but based on our most current assessment, the numbers are spot on.
Okay, so I appreciate that. Based on what we report and what I think that we've spent. Now, we know that some of our expenditures and encumbrances are reported in the IT budget. And so I would just like to have the opportunity to look through and make sure that they've gotten all of the items associated with our program.
Well, the reason I started there is because if our spread is between 2.4 million, where's Cottrell, 2.4 and 16 million, right, of the IMF,
yes.
This is 2 million. So that's why I'm curious why one program would go up 2 million, and I think that's something that if there's, we could have an answer, that would be very helpful.
I would also like to add that our costs every year had a forward funding component. If you remember the discussion that we had with the national, we were able to give that up. And so now we need the full amount because there's no forward funding offsetting the costs anymore.
So forward funding makes people very nervous. I think
right.
A better way to say it is that you encumbered the money that you thought you needed but did not need all of it, so you disencumbered money you did not need, right?
Before that,
you held money that you'd obligated.
No, we actually paid the contract through September.
We encumbered current year money
yes.
for next year's pockets, and we continued to do that year over year.
Yeah, that's,
so we were just,
that is forward
right.
funding.
So last year they ended that, and they said you can no longer do that.
Right.
Encumber this year's money for next year. So
right.
in this current year,
This is Jim Herman. When did we bring the four additional courts online through the BCP? Remind me of when that was in this cycle.
For Lanwan, you mean?
Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm thinking of Lanwan rather than Phoenix. Apologies.
So are you saying that your contract is out of alignment with the same problem that they have? In other words, your contract went into the next year, which is why you obligated money. Because forward funding doesn't sound legally authorized, but if you encumbered money that was based on your contract term into the next fiscal year, that's what you did.
Yes, right.
Okay.
And
so
we
So what I would like to know is of the $2 million, how much of that is for your new contract, just like Mark explained for his contract. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Does anyone here know what we're talking about? Do you want me to explain what we're talking about?
Sure.
We got it.
Everybody got it?
I think we had a very long discussion on this
yes,
issue.
Yes, we did.
Notwithstanding the correction to be briefly, yeah.
So they had a contract that went beyond the exact fiscal year, intentionally.
Like October to October.
Right,
court
so you encumber ahead of time
you
to pay for that, right.
Well, actually, you encumber for the contract.
That you have coming, that you've already committed to.
That you've already
right.
obligated your funds for. And there was a thought last year that we needed to tie contracts with the fiscal year. Some of us
gotcha.
Didn't agree, but that's what happened, and now this year we're having to pay for 12 plus some because
gotcha.
To get it back on the budget.
Understood. Thank you.
Can I note something? So the council did cut the
Phoenix programs allocation in Fortune 15 by almost 1.7 million. The allocation in Fortune 15 was 13.885 million. They only spent about, we'll check the numbers, 10.3 million. And so the allocation this year is 12 million. So there was a cut from 13.85 to the 12 million. And there was another adjustment made to the contract.
So as we start to go through the various programs, and we're going to be referring to, of course, that first page on the handout we got this morning that we're looking at, and also page 97 of your materials, which is the benefit, it's the survey results, benefit provided to court by cluster sorted by statewide average. And as we go through these, we're going to start on that page 97 at the lowest ones. Well, we're going to start with enterprise policy planning because we're not going to talk about ICMS or V3 today. But I did want Stephen to go through in your materials under item 5 is just a general approach that can be used to determine reduction levels. Obviously, we could do a pro rata reduction on all. We could do a pro rata reduction on the lowest ones on the benefit list. But Stephen's just going to give you some ideas, and if you have other ideas about how to go about it, we can take them up from there.
Kyle, do you have the
So, Carol, if the land WAN was 16.1, what would be our target deficit?
It would be 20, or for 16.1. It would be 2.3 million.
I'm sorry?
2.3 million.
Okay.
That's attachment 4C, revised the fund condition statement. Scenario 2.
Okay. Thank you.
Control and I are going to discuss with you the information we provided for item number 5 found on page 208 to 212. It's not necessary for you to refer to them. You can if you want to, but if you didn't want to, that's fine too. I think we're going to talk more conceptual, not necessarily the specific numbers. So in this report, we talk about the non-pro rata approaches that you could consider taking. Whatever you do, it's going to fall into one of four categories probably, depending on how you want to slice and dice the categories. One is a pro rata approach, which essentially assumes that you value each program exactly the same. You don't want to have any of the programs, so therefore whatever reduction target you want to reach, you just reduce everyone's proportion. That's the easiest thing. You don't have to think about it. You just apply it. Although that's also in some ways unrealistic because I'm sure, as you see in the surveys, not all the programs are valid exactly the same. There's prioritization. Depending on how you score, there's many different ways you can score these programs. You can use the FOD criteria or other criteria you've chosen and choose some method of putting some kind of number behind each of them. You can weigh them differently. You can weigh some heavier, some lighter. But the non-pro-rata basically assumes that you do prioritize. So there are three approaches in terms of non-pro rata. One is to, this might be helpful conceptually, maybe not practically, but at least conceptually. One is to eliminate funding only. You're not going to reduce any, you're going to eliminate first whole programs until you reach your target. So one way of doing it is you start from the attachment found on page, Judge Earl just mentioned, 97, on page 97, start from the bottom and eliminate until you get your goal. You can take that approach. Now, you should feel fairly comfortable about your scoring approach. If you don't feel comfortable about your scoring approach, you might not want to take that.
You mean the results of the survey?
Results of the survey or whatever scoring or evaluation that you would want to apply. But if you do, then you could take that approach. And that's easy, too, because it gets your target easily. Depending on the level of cuts, you might have to cut more or less programs. So that's one distinct approach.
And the difficulty is we're not sure what the target is, because it could be 2.3, but depend on what the results of the land when, it
right.
could be
right.
16.
Yes.
Right?
Right.
And
so,
I think one caveat with the eliminate only, I think if I remember correctly, for that scenario, you overshoot your target by, I think, 1.7 million, is it? I think if we eliminate only based on the survey scores.
Right, so there's a slight variation because using that, it's not a pure approach because if you just eliminate only, you can overshoot or undershoot. So for one program, you might pare it down a little. You wouldn't cut it 100%. You would cut it whatever percent to get to your target. Invariably, there's going to be one program you cut less than 100% because to get to your target. You don't want to overshoot it or undershoot it. The second distinct scenario approach is on the opposite spectrum, is where you apply a non-prorata. You don't do it proportionally, and you don't eliminate anything because maybe you feel like not all of them are important enough not to cut. There's some reason for you not to cut any of the programs. Under that approach, there's many different permutations. There's infinite permutations, but you could protect some. You can say, let's not cut any, some you don't cut at all because they're ranked so high, they're so important. You could group them into three different groupings and say cut higher, lower, and nothing, or some mixture of that. So there's many different permutations. It all depends on how you want to group the scoring by. And the last option is really a hybrid. And that's probably what you're going to end up with. It's probably you might eliminate one or two, do a prorata or non-prorata. It's going to be a mix. And in all these approaches, we did run some numbers, and it's not to substitute judgment, because I think all of you, especially if you want to apply judgment, it's not just some black box with some mathematical formulas. But if you do accept the formula, then you could then apply. Then you would feel comfortable, because the formulas in the scoring, that is what reflects your values and your judgment, and then you just run the numbers mathematically. But with a committee like this, it's very difficult for you all to agree with and to discuss how you want to come by it. So we did provide some general scenarios for you to see what the results might be under one of those three approaches. But we thought it might be helpful just conceptually for you to think about those are the four categories of cuts you can make. One, strict pro rata. Second, eliminate only. One, don't eliminate any, but don't use pro rata. Cut some more, cut some less, maybe protect some and don't cut at all. Or four, it's just really a hybrid. You can just, again, that's probably going to end up more on that approach than any of the other three.
So, Cottrell, on the very last page of the document that you prepared, I want to make sure we're all looking at the same thing. So, scenario four was the one that we went through today with the 16.1 kind of across all 4 years, which is where we got the negative fund balance of $2.3 million, right? I want to make sure we're looking at the same column, so scenario F. When you look at the 17-18, we're taking that negative number up as a beginning balance, and that should really be zero, probably on line three, starting with 17-18, because we would never carry a negative fund balance over. And the reason I'm mentioning that is because it overstates the fund balance negative amount by whatever was carried over. So, for example, 17-18 would really be closer to $11 million negative and so on. Not that it helps us a whole lot, but I wanted us to know that you would never carry over a negative fund balance. It would always be a zero. The other thing I wanted to just make sure I understand is when you're looking at the line 22, the over-under expenditures, would it be a true statement to say that's what we are overspending? So if you looked at Judge Good's comment, which is what are we trying to do to
– Yes.
That's
yes.
what we're overspending. Now – that's overstated slightly, too, because we're carrying over a negative fund balance. But that's good. That's the line that if we really wanted to save the future,
right.
that's what we would try to do. So I wanted to make sure we were all in agreement that that's the scenario we're looking at if, in fact, we funded the land one at 16.1 would be. Scenario four, it's overstated slightly but not a lot, and that's kind of what we should focus on as our target. Right? Okay. So with that.
We've talked about going up the list from the bottom, and as I sit here, I'm wondering, you know, there's no right way to do this, but are there ones, are there programs on the list that we think we just aren't going to cut? We just can't afford to cut them. That there, are there going to be any sacred cows, so to speak?
Well, could I ask one question?
Sure.
On the regional office assistant, when Burbank closes, I'm assuming that that will now become a general fund because it's not a regional office. I shouldn't assume that?
It's still staff. Does it have that name?
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a name.
So why don't you just call everybody in San Francisco regional office and then charge the IMF for the whole staff?
No.
Oh, wow. How silly.
No, I'm just saying it's regional in that that was the name that's been thrown in there. It's not, it's somehow eliminating the concept of the region. It doesn't mean that the worker that provides the course is not necessary.
Okay.
So I have a question. Looking at the survey here, I was looking at the scenario where things that didn't get a cumulative score of six, et cetera. And just looking at those lines, is there anybody that doesn't need data integration, the trial court workload study support, or the enterprise policy planning statewide development? Do people just not understand what those are, or am I just misunderstanding what they are?
No, I think you're right.
Similarly, if you look at 15, 16, and 17, is there anybody that doesn't need court interpreter testing or superior court, or put another way, that's not benefited by those programs and where there are really no alternatives?
No, I think you're right.
So shouldn't we kind of, there may be some others on here that others have, shouldn't we kind of take those and move those above the line?
So what you're saying is, and that's a good suggestion, that unless we say we don't want to do audits, and I think that would be a mistake, we would line through the audit, not consider it?
That would be my view.
Are they requesting an increase in there? Is that audit services?
Yes, I think Mike's saying don't even consider them.
Irregardless.
As a reduction, we have to do it.
My only question was if they're asking for an increase in their allegation from last year, that's maybe what we should put.
Okay.
But it doesn't look like, are we talking about if we look at the first page of the handout, audit services at the top?
Yeah.
Page 97.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we're looking at both. The first page shows you what they asked for, Mike, over what they got, and they're not asking for an increase, so they're probably striked off the list if we agree that we need them and they didn't. Ask for any more money than what we gave them last year.
But right? That's China, just to suggest anything that wasn't given a six or anything above a six was automatically off.
So on page 97, we're talking about at line 16, Superior Court Audit Program.
15, 16, 17.
Well, I'm just focused on, I just want to make sure I'm on track here. And then it correlates with on the first page of the handouts we got today, item one, audit services. Is that the same thing?
Yes.
And they're not asking for an increase.
Right.
We know if they've spent all that money.
They would be on an encumbrance report.
Also on page one, as of October 30th, they've spent $570,584.
Right. Column H.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. H. That's just through October.
Okay. I'm sorry. Can I just follow up?
Sure.
If you say H is expenditures plus encumbrances, we know the quality of the encumbrance, this year expenditure.
That kind of goes to our discussion this morning, right? That depending on this is a point in time,
yeah.
Where we're at, and maybe in February when we look at this again, we might have a better sense,
yes,
of where they are.
Okay, so in terms of are they increasing over what they got this year? Are we looking at column H or are we looking at column J?
So the 16-17 would be M, right? So
over what?
Over J.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Right. Okay.
So we're looking at J and the scenarios.
Right.
Okay. So does everyone agree with Mike that, for example, this one is one that they have to have, and they're not asking for an increase from last year, so we just fund it as is, right?
Well, my comment is that I think this is the fifth year that this group has had to look at this fund, and so there is no low-hanging fruit, right? I mean, there's nothing that can be cut easy, and it's already been cut. So if we go through here, we're going to get to the end of the list, and we're going to have plenty to touch on every item that is a valuable program that needs to exist. So I'm almost in the same – I wasn't on the group last year, but I was on the two prior years, and we did the same thing, and we went through the entire list and said these are all valuable programs. Somebody has to be first by this cut. So knowing that and knowing this list that's already been examined 5 years in a row, I'm almost in favor of a pro rata cut because we already know the value of the program.
Okay. And if I could add, for my benefit, because I, too, have been kicking this can for a few years, and the discussion that we had was not about the interpreters being, critical. We all need it. The issue, going back to our principle, is the IMF really the location or the funding source for that? We recognize that, that's a core function. Yes, it's a regulatory, the certification, judicial council. And we assumed that this was part and parcel of Program 4545. But we recognize that there's a different reality there that is preventing us from shifting it. But again, certification, regulation, why should it be IMF?
Rick, and then Rebecca.
Well, and again, I'm new to this, so kind of bear with me. But to Brian's point, I do agree that probably the low-hanging fruit is gone. But is the committee ready to say that all programs are equal in terms of their impact and cuts? So if you're going to cut across the board, that's pretty much what we're saying. So again, going, I think, back to Mike's point, true that none of this is low-hanging fruit, but we could still determine that some are more important and need to at least remain more whole than some of the others.
Rebecca and then Judge Smith.
So I agree with Jose. However, I think there's a number of programs here that even last year we decided this was not the right location for them, and we said, JCC budget, this is your expense, and they're back here again because there's nothing to take care of them. And so are we prepared to say, at the risk of them being completely gone, JCC go handle it? Because that's really the decision that's going to be made if we handed this back and we don't take it. That's really the decision that they're going to have to make because there's no money. So I tend to be in favor of a pro rata reduction as well because I don't think that even last year we got to a point where we were ready to completely cut those extra cost people and those extra people and because there was no solution and the JCC was not prepared to absorb those costs. And so I think that's why you're seeing them again here.
Judge
Smith? Yeah. Well, to Brian's point, and I wasn't involved. I was involved last year. I wasn't involved before. But I would say that if we're going to consider or assume that they're all valuable and do the pro rata, then we may be discounting the fact that some of the courts have scored some of the program as not really very effective. So we may actually have some room to discuss cutting programs that courts themselves have not evaluated as very high in value to them. It's something to talk about, but I would think that we would want to consider, if you're going to cut something, figure that out first, and then and after the decisions about cutting or not cutting have been made, then sort of some hybrid approach. But I think starting from the we can't touch this and going, sort of squeeze yourself down to getting to the ones, well, you've got to cut somewhere, so if you take the first 20 and said you can't cut anything, well, then everything else that you haven't discussed has got to be cut more. So that doesn't make sense to me as much as sort of going from the bottom up and
cutting
what you
need to
cut.
Okay, and it did work well.
Yeah.
Judge Conklin?
No, I'm not on this committee, so but recognizing it's going to come and step up. So now it's going to come to all of us as truck or budget advisory. I mean, one thought would be, as we always do, provide some options. So one of our options is a very simple one. We took the 10 bottom ones and we cut them. And here's the impact. That means those 10 programs are eliminated. They're gone. And here's what court thought of them. But it's an option. The other is pro rata across the board, 1 to 39, pro rata 5%, whatever it is. It's an option. And the other is there's certain ones we don't want to touch. And I'm sort of parroting what Stephen just said. There are certain programs we've decided we're not going to touch those. The rest of them we're going to pro rata so everybody gets a bite. I guess the only other concern I have, I heard Lucy say that of the surveys, seven courts Cluster 1 did not respond.
That's what she said. That's 50%.
That's half of the Cluster 1 courts.
And, you know, Rick and I were talking about it a little bit, and we have heard them in some of the meetings we've been in talk about not only how much time it takes, but also they tend to combine services sometimes, and we're thinking there may have been responses, one for four courts or something.
Oh, that makes sense. Because they do things together.
Charter Court Budget Advisory might wonder about that. So we need to be, you need to be prepared to say, here's why.
Well, and I'm telling Rebecca, the other thing I heard was that if we're really busy and how can we position it, and why are they asking us to give them the same information as they're giving? I don't know that some of the courts
as last year.
The post to the
card. Yeah, okay.
Katra?
I was just mentioning Stevens, item 5, hybrid approach kind of gets to your points about eliminating some and then applying a pro rata reduction approach to some of the others. So that it allows you to eliminate the courts or the programs that the courts didn't find most useful or effective without, yeah, so.
That's good.
Which is 24, the, pardon me, the 23, the enterprise policy. I didn't fully understand what Mark was telling us about all of this, but if you look at the second page, in prior years, it was running around $5, $6 million. Occasionally, it would be $8 million, but it just pumps around a lot.
What line are you on?
I'm on line 23, and I'm on the second page.
I think Sherry can probably answer that.
And now, it goes up to $8 million for something that...
It would, no, it was exactly the same issue that happened with Phoenix, where they had a contract that I think expired in December.
Yes, like mid-year. Summer, 7 months, 5 months. Summer.
And there was a thought last year that the contract needed to end with the fiscal year. And so what happened was we only funded it for 6 months last year, and now they've got 12 months for it, where before it was not a full year because it straddled fiscal year. And so we knew that last year when we wanted to align the contract, but many on the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee felt it was important to align large contracts with a fiscal year. And so that's what happened. So this year it's larger because we're paying more than what we have previously.
And the lower number in 2016 contributed to us having our $8 million fund balance because we just took all those unallocated monies that we would otherwise not use to maintain the cycle.
Right.
We just dumped it in and retained it in the fund balance. So it's helping us without having to get back to the 12 months.
Okay, but I'm questioning the number in two regards. Look at the second page.
The fluctuation between the years?
If you look at that line on the second page, in some years it's as low as $6 million. And some years it goes up to 8. Most years it's $6 million. So I'm questioning first what a full year is.
And we should have him explain it. Some of those years, every year, last year Judge Lau, the prior expenditures got a discount of something. So we should probably ask Mark to come back if you could to explain that. He said he'll come back.
I don't know. If we're looking for money,
yep.
I mean, we've got things that are like $30,000.
Right.
We've got things that are like $8 million.
Right.
That's
why I focused on Phoenix, because I wanted to understand that, but it sounds like it's the same thing.
The IT office did provide an explanation on page 198 on this program, and they did talk somewhat about why there's an increase. The paragraph that starts the header explanation of increase decrease from 1516 allocation, so that might be helpful for you to look at. Although we could still get Mark. Rick?
I can come back and leave that cover too on that. But it says you have a contract that goes from January 1st, and if you're encumbering, this year you encumbered 12 months, starting this January through the following January. But then, as you say, we kind of switched years midstream, pardon my metaphor. And so you start to decide to pay January 1st. I'm not sure where you're short, because what's the following year? You wouldn't encumber 12 months.
No, they didn't.
They took the money away.
Oh, they did?
Yeah, they took the money.
They pulled it out for the second 6 months in that fiscal year.
Oh, so you got to pay for that.
That's what happened.
So they said, yeah. 40 years last year's money to pay 6 months this year. Right. We're going to take out what would have been 6 months in the next year. So you're only going to get six.
Yeah.
we took the money away.
The other question I have about this is I thought I heard Mark say this is for historical licenses that we don't necessarily use all that.
We are. And Mark Scott Consultant is looking at that right now because the question is, the way it was explained to me is at the time that they signed the contract, there were options of either an enterprise license, meaning that everyone within the court family could use it, including maybe some justice partners at the time we were looking at CCMS and things like that, or death type licenses, individual licenses. And there's a big cost differential between an enterprise and an individual license. So the question that consultants are looking at, I've been told, is there something in between? Because we could not afford to buy individual licenses, it'd be very expensive. So is it between an enterprise license and a desktop license?
So I have a recollection. I have a recollection of just getting a survey
right.
This week on all
Everybody
else got one? That's the other from just now. Yeah. So. Right, isn't that exactly what we're kind of drilling into now?
Yeah, the consultants are looking at that right now. How many? How much?
I gave no number.
You taught me, Sherry,
never to say a number.
Excellent.
Well, let's do this. Let's just start with a list.
Okay.
And let's look at the survey results, how much they're asking in terms of allocation this year, and consider any of the impacts that the survey results provided. So if we start at line 31 on page 97 with the enterprise policy planning, the EPP, and it's line 23 on that attachment. So I was, Lucy, if I were going to try to find the survey summary results of the EPP, is that, how are those numbered? They're
off by one.
What page
are you on? 24, page 24. You know, I do notice, though, on enterprise, they jump to 8, as just good pointed out, and then in out years, it goes back down to 5.7. So it makes you wonder, again, if this is something we could smooth out, you know, somehow.
Well, and it could well be. Come February, you may find that the savings even approach a good percentage of your $2 million.
Right. If we stick with the 16.1. Okay.
So I think people get confused about the difference between licenses and products. The Oracle gave us quite a suite of products a number of years ago. And now one of the major questions is, which of those products are not being used, and therefore they may represent some savings that could be achieved through that. And then when you talk about the number of licenses, the only way you can actually determine number of licenses is if somebody does a forensic audit, which would take months, because then you're asking for every single user, are you using, you know, the product, and which of the products are you using? If the Oracle cannot tell us today which of those licenses are being used, that's what we cannot do. So that's, to me, I think the product is where there's potential for greater decision. That we can dump A, D, E, F, and H.
And yeah. We just got a survey last week.
And the answers I saw, 70% of the products were not being used by Los Angeles.
Yeah.
So
how much is that worth?
It is not $2.3 million.
So I'm not sure that we have enough information to be able to make a decision on whether or not we can reduce this or not.
So could we say, could we give assignments and maybe Mark Shaw could tell us what they found out with the survey, how much we could potentially save, and why it's fluctuating? Because it's, again, 8 million and it goes back down to 5 point something and
just made a flatness. Yeah. So in addition to that, surveys were asked back on December 22nd.
Okay. So we'll have it by February.
Right.
So are you writing assignments down? Is someone writing assignments down? You'll let Mark know that?
I'll let Mark know.
Okay.
Yep. The next one on our list is on page 97, Court-Ordered Debt Task Force.
And if I go to the expenditure request, it looks like they received, they're asking to hold their allocation flat from last year. When I look at the survey results, which is on page 156,
my question is, what happens if we eliminate this?
I'll put her again, and the whole finances fee structure that's been introduced so many times recently and nationally, so it's not just a California issue. And we, meaning the JCC and the LAO, received a letter from De Leon asking for us to come back with recommendations to him in January about how to make this process simpler and more affordable in terms of the whole pharmacy structure. And I'm sure he knows how complicated that is. One of our peers, which is Cory and Oga, is looking for someone proposing a bill that just says something like, just cut things 33% across the board, which everybody here knows would have a devastating impact and would really not be palatable. I think through some discussions that Oga has had in his office, I think there's a better sense that this is a very, very complicated issue. The $19,000 that was there was simply for meetings that were going to be held in Charlottesville.
It's revenue distribution training so that folks can have folks on, folks can come and learn how to make sure they distribute income.
But I know it's that budget, so I'd like to say that we are having fewer meetings now, so potentially we could go down the simple path.
Okay, thank you.
Sold.
We found $8,000.
Woo, $8,000.
This is different from the court order debt task force budget.
It's the same budget, so we use the same money that where we pay for medications
right.
on the task force, and we pay for their travel and anything else that goes with that. So we also use those monies to go to the regions that hold the educational specialists.
But there's a statutory authority to establish the task force.
That is true.
So just me by
phone.
I like that. We've got to get this rolling somehow. I'll take the 50%, right?
If I can only add one more
thing.
Yeah.
One of the reasons why we got engaged with the State Controller's Office was there was a period of time, 5 years went by, and it never updated Appendix D, which is the schedule that everybody uses.
We have been engaged for a period of time with Ventura, Santa Clara, in Shasta, I'm trying to come up with a common template that then everybody could use. And you know, one of the issues is that, you know, 5 years passed, the schedule was never updated. What that means was courts were collecting money, distributing it, series of things that didn't exist anymore, or they were not collecting money because everything was not been updated, so nobody knew what to do. In terms of there was a new distribution requirement.
Until the controller came in and did an audit and slapped you with fines and interest.
Right.
Right. Which is one of the which luckily you don't have any staff to come and pay.
Right.
Sorry?
We'll take that.
The next one is self-help document assembly programs.
Thank you.
And I'm not sure where that is on self-help document assembly program, where that is on the attachment.
Yeah, I was trying to put that myself. I think that is
there
are three lines. CFC Publications, that's what it is.
It's,
thank you. I believe it's CFC Publications.
Is there more to CFC Publications then?
Oh, yeah, I did see
it. Is that it?
What's the number for the document? Number two.
So,
wasn't CFCC the one that we said, see if people will pay for it, and they said no, and now it's come back? Yeah, it's on my list.
That's the CalDog. So the, one of the proposals was to have them see if users were going to pay for at least part of the cost.
And they said no.
Are there other things in CFCC publications besides this? And if you look at the survey results on page 100, you get a range of folks saying that they're because they are implementing new case management systems, that they're creating their own.
I'm sorry, this is an interactive software self-help electronic form. So
number five
on your attachment 481.
So it's 60,000, and that's what they're recommending going forward. So my question is, can we eliminate this?
Well,
let's cut it. Gone.
We're at the 68. This may be related to that committee that's assembled to get the templates statewide.
Right.
So we're saying that we don't want to continue that service. It's going to save us tons of time and money down the road.
There's two pieces to it. There's the one that, well, Los Angeles hired a project manager.
Right.
And we're managing the Tyler court component with courts taking pieces. I think this is the judicial counsel piece for the non-Tyler court to make sure the language all comes together. But I don't know why they're spending $60,000 on it, because I don't know why.
Rebecca, were you serious?
I just think we have to start somewhere.
Yeah.
And if there are that many people going to Tyler, then there's going to be some solutions that even the non-Tyler courts could duplicate, I would think.
They are included. The council's included in all of these for the non-Tyler courts.
The work is... Okay.
Well, if there's a better place to start, I'm all ears.
Looking at the survey results, it seems like it is one we could probably afford to cut. Unfortunately, it's not that big of a dollar value, but
anyone disagree?
No. Hello, you have reached 408-866-2260. We're not home right now, but leave a message and we'll call you back. Thanks. Bye.
Is there a page that describes what it is?
I pulled it up. I will find it.
Page 100 was the survey.
Right here. And I believe, isn't that the translation for DB4?
It is document assembly software programs that simplify the process of completing judicial counsel forms and pleadings using a TurboTax model.
Yep, like hot dogs. And hot dogs are going away.
It assists self-represented litigants in preparing understandable and legible pleadings.
Right.
They are used by some of our self-help centers.
Why? I think we're all... Go on.
We in agreement with that?
Yes, I think so. And my suggestion would be that when Stephen, judicial counsel staff, prepares the recommendations, if when we meet in February, if we've missed something that's not included in the materials that needs to be considered, they should bring it. We all have more information about the enterprise licensing. We'll have a whole bunch of information, and so there might even be some cushion there that we don't know about, right? I hope.
We're score that as elimination of the funding.
Yep.
Okay. Item.
That was 29. Item 29 on page 97.
Thank you.
The next one is
60,000.
Source is 68 now.
Trial court procurement, which is number 28 on our list. Sherry, how much are they requesting?
I'm looking. Right here. It is on line 18.
Line 24.
Did the second position, Blatko, move to facilities as we had suggested? And
was that a yes or no?
That was a
yes.
And this is the final person that assists the courts with procurement questions.
So my question is, aren't some courts doing their own procurement, and is there an opportunity for courts to collaborate with each other?
Oh, yes.
And would eliminating it kind of nudge courts into doing that?
Yes.
Is what?
Oh, is this the person that develops master services agreements? In IC or in what areas? Because doesn't IC do their own?
Paging master agreements to all the travelers.
Just one person?
Yes.
Including the IT master service agreement.
Yes.
That's pretty valuable. Do you tap into master services agreement?
It's a big ticket item.
So you would lose the master, the ability to utilize the master service?
Yeah, we have a lot of horsepower in that.
Do you have thoughts through? Are you, do you have the MSA that you update every year? And you just use that as a calendar and you go in and update them?
We use them as a calendar sometimes when we have that resource.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I don't think that resource is still right now. That resource is still right now.
So it should score current year savings of like $70,000.
I'm sorry?
So we should book $70,000 of savings for that.
And not 124?
Because it's not filled right now, but we're in the process of filling.
You can look at the list on the website right now. A lot of those new updates are updated. So we've been raising the flag saying we need to fill that position so that we can update.
And is that something a court could do on behalf of the branch? Or does it have to be judicial counsel people that do it?
The folks that we need to talk to would refer to the JCC level.
Prefer, or is it mandated?
They'll prefer.
Okay.
Because they don't have time in their procurement shops to do it, and they don't know that the individual court can get everybody's input on how it should be.
You as a trial had a good idea of writing in such a way that you can't afford.
Yeah, I mean, we write tag-along contracts all the time, and of course, as you know, we do share procurement for 18 other courts, and so we could do the MSAs, to be quite blunt, to save the branch 120. I could do it. I could do it for 120. Oh. I mean, I'm thinking if the list isn't huge, we could just do it, but I don't know how big the list is.
And then the question is, do you need to fill that other spot that you're that's vacant?
That's part of the 124.
No.
Rick?
Are we duplicating an MSA that is totally exists in other branches? I mean, for example, Magnet Hours, I can't think of it.
Yeah, a county contract or a state contract.
My understanding is that's part of the research. You go find out what's available to the state contracts or run the courts and search. And then if that's not available, specifically the court documents.
Well, I'm happy to footnote this. If you could send me the list of what the MSA contracts look like, I could certainly probably have my staff, you know, do just as part of the shared procurement. They love it when I do this.
Okay.
Can you send that to me, and then we'll see if it's something we can add? Okay.
So we're putting an asterisk because we're coming back to that?
In February.
Okay.
Or sooner, I can let you know. But if it's, you know, 900, I won't be able to do it within existing resources. If it's
okay.
80, probably could do a couple of months.
Okay.
Enterprise.
Yes.
So Mark, this is Sherry. Can you hear us?
I can.
One of the questions that we had was on the enterprise licenses, and there seems to be a fluctuation there for the costs as well. Could you help us understand why that fluctuates between $5 million sometimes and now $8 million is being requested next year?
Yes, so that's under the program summary sheets that we had for each of the programs under EPPs, there's a section that describes the variation over the previous year's allocation for each program. And in that section, it describes that the reductions that were made last year covered the encumbrances that were for the cost of the program and half a year encumbrance for the current year.
Page 198.
That explains the increase for next year, Mark, but one member had a question as to when you look at the historical funding, it fluctuates.
I don't have that in front of me, Sherry. Most of that program is the Oracle maintenance agreement. It's about $5 million. There is a small percentage increase as part of that contract. I think it's, I'm not really sure, Melanie, if you're on the line, I think it's 3% or so that it can increase it can, at the discretion of the vendor, go up a small amount each year.
Anybody else have questions for Mark while we have him on the line?
I think you have research that tells us about it.
So the comment, Mark, you probably can't hear, is that we're hoping that by our February meeting you could provide a better understanding as to why the cost increases have gone up, not because of the new contract terms that now require us to pay more next fiscal year, but rather historically, and then hopefully by October we'll have more information on the recent survey that went out on the enterprise licensing and what potential costs we could save. Do we think we would have that by our February meeting?
Our hope is for sure by February to have at least some idea of where we are with the savings on the enterprise license. And I'm happy to go back and look to see, you know, what might have caused a change in the budget other than the encumbrances. One element was that the Adobe license program, which was separate last year, was rolled into this EPP program, so that's also an increase that's there.
Mark, this is Melanie. I'm on the line.
Oh, thank you, Melanie.
Any other questions for Mark or Melanie while we have them? All right, thank you, Mark.
Sure thing. Thank you all. Take care.
The next one is page 97, domestic violence forms translation. This pays to translate domestic violence forms and instructions into various languages, Spanish, Chinese, Korean, and Vietnamese, and make them available to all courts. And it's they're holding flat, I think, at $17,000. We tried to shift these to be paid out of the court interpreter fund, and we were told that the council did not believe there was sufficient authority to do that. It wasn't done here. How would it be done? Courts would just spend their own money to have it done?
Now, this will eventually go away as we do the electronic form packages because they will be translated as part of that process, but we're a ways away from that.
I'm not sure that there's a legal requirement that we can't do it. I think it's just the way it's done.
No, it's
been... I would have to go back to judicial counsel for approval if that's true.
It was asked to use, 40, I think, 45-45.
Money for it.
And, yes.
Anybody have a thought on this one?
Keep it?
Yeah.
Mr. Perron. What happened?
Hey, I'm fine with the 3%. I'm only with 3%.
All right.
Play everything else.
Are we in agreement with that? Keep the...
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, okay. Agreed.
All right.
The next one is the trial court workload study support. I'm not sure what this is.
Not for our
WAC
study happening in March.
The RAS?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And what are they requesting?
I think it's 13,000.
Mine is
$15,000.
Yeah, we definitely need that. That's the only way they would get out to the courts and actually measure for routes and goes into WAFM.
Right.
So that's pretty critical. And that's an engagement.
So we're going to maintain that?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think the courts rated it as low as it did then?
I don't think
that's true. Nobody
really thinks about it.
When I was trying to make that number.
The next one is data integration, which is on line 22 on the attachment. They're actually going down by 1,000 or so.
And Mike's right. This is one they probably didn't understand either, and everybody has to use it.
But. Yeah, that's important, at least for the time being until some of the work stream stuff gets done.
So could we book that $300,000 savings that they're suggesting for now?
Yes.
See where that takes us.
So we'll approve at the requested level?
Yeah.
If you want more information, it's on page 196 of the materials, data integration.
So is that actually a savings?
Yes, we're at 368.
But we
know that's
we use the 368 as our figure, or we use the 600?
Oh, I mean in savings, right? Because they spent the 3.8. Oh, yeah, no, there is no savings.
Right.
That's
right.
The answer. Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Yep.
The next one is statewide support for collections program, and I'm not sure what this is.
Funded out of the trial court trust. This is the only one program funded out of the trial court trust, and it was made it on the survey, and that's for the enhanced collections. It used to be called the enhanced collections.
So it's in the TCTF?
Yeah, you already addressed in the TCTF. $625,000. That was recommendation number one.
But this is the program, one of them. I think we should probably have a better understanding when we look at the deficit in 17-18. Right. Okay.
You can revisit that recommendation
if that works. Yeah.
Okay.
The next one is juvenile law practice resources.
I think that's PFCC publications. I'm pretty sure that's what it's referring to. Is it CalDog? Is it left with CalDog?
So it would.
Yeah.
Any idea where it is in the survey?
Juvenile law practice resources.
Lucy? Where is it in the juvenile law practice resources? Do we know what page that's on?
102.
So as to CSE education programs, allocation this year is $67,000.
Couldn't course subscribe to CalDog on their own?
So is this the one that the recipients that they wouldn't pay for?
Yes.
So if it's not valuable enough for them to pay for it, why should we?
That's kind of how I am.
And I'm
it
sure
does go to judges too, though.
So then I would say that the court resource,
$20,000. I mean, I'm not suggesting it doesn't have valuable information, but if they're not willing
right.
to
pay for it,
support it.
Okay. So it's $20,000. Is that a recommendation to eliminate it?
That's good. This would go to the example you gave this morning where we need to let courts know because
right.
this is something they'd have to pay. Yeah.
Does anyone disagree that we would eliminate it? I see a lot of heads shaking. We would.
Yes.
So that's to eliminate.
Yeah.
Regional Office Assistance Group. And that's on line 33 of the attachment. And they do request a slight increase from last year.
$12,000. Well, actually, we're going to do increases for the JCC staff items, purely JCC staff.
We added the COLA.
Right, the 2.5% salary increase, which was applied for fiscal year
16-17.
Can't hear you. Oh, I'm sorry. 2.5% salary increase for fiscal year 16-17. So that would be. Thinking that's the reason for their increase, right?
Yeah. Benefits otherwise, too, right?
Yes.
So this one really just gives me heartburn.
What do they do?
This is a group that we call, this is a particular set of resources that are particular value to the Southern California courts. You don't have to act, and they have, there's HR attorneys. Attorneys in there are one of the services that we use. I forget who else is down there. But, I mean, in the past 2 weeks, we've had the attorneys to my court to work on some very complex and serious HR issue matters that we're dealing with. And otherwise, they're going to move up here. But the need doesn't go away, it's just the location change.
But the heartburn I have is they do exactly the same duties and responsibilities as the lawyers who are in San Francisco. And this, it just troubles me that it would not be a court central office function. They don't have money, I get it, but why would a court who calls San Francisco or in the Bay Area use staff that's a general fund staff and people that, you know, it was a way to code these people.
That's fine. My comment is it's going to be a very serious, that they can provide a very valuable support function for us.
And I'm not saying they should go away.
But that's the practical impact it would be if we got the funding. So.
But if folks in the Bay Area can call San Francisco and get answers, instead of calling Los Angeles, could just call San Francisco and get your answer?
That's
not what their work. They would call and tell you, you need to call these folks who are serve you in this capacity. Forget about what they are. They're just a different function. And I think it's a bit of a, they're not the same exact work.
Exactly the same. Well, last year I asked that question three different times. They do exactly the same duties and responsibilities as the others. It's just that that's where they were coded. So I'm not. There's probably no solution. It just feels wrong.
Sherry, I don't know how it fits into this, but as I have questions, I don't always speak to somebody in San Francisco. I'm talking to folks down in Burbank because they're the ones that are the designees on an issue or program, not necessarily. You serve those folks here, and those people serve the folks up there.
So they have specialized lawyers.
I have a question because
I agree to a certain extent with Sherry that one of the regional offices is being eliminated, and I don't know when that is.
The physical location is being eliminated. Everything is being moved to other locations.
One thing that could be done is we could look at it in terms of do we want to continue, I was looking at the number of FTEs. Rick?
I'm wondering if this is just more of a case where it's an important service, but it's just being funded from the wrong place.
Right.
Which I think what Sherry's saying, because I suspect, I don't know for sure, but I suspect that the reason it ended up this way is one of those things that morphed over time, that when they established the regional offices, we're going to put people out there, they're going to be more involved with your courts. They're going to provide expanded and enhanced services and such, and that's probably why it ended up in the IMF or one of the two funds. But it never made it to that point for a lot of different reasons. And I do agree that these are the same services. It might be that particular attorney has a particular set of knowledge, but that's about him, I'll bet, more than the fact that he's in the Burbank office.
I don't know what the answer is.
Ideally, there would be general funds for the state, but there isn't.
Right.
And, in the short term, the answer was that there isn't general fund. But the longer answer was, as part of the reevaluation and the realignment of our operations, are there resources in the medium to long term that could be redeployed for this out of the general fund? Possibly. But that was the issue was. As it stands now, no. But that doesn't mean when you look at realigning our judicial council operations to what it is that the branch needs for us, there would be an opportunity
So I view this as, so this is legal services, right? And so it's kind of in the same bucket as litigation management unit. And so we've got $5 million something of legal services. And I don't think this group has looked at litigation management services to determine whether or not that's the model that we should be using. And, I mean, they're very valuable. We all agree they're valuable. Those services need to be there. But I do think maybe we need to look at the model. And I would lump this in with that program because it's all legal services to determine whether or not that's the model that we want. And is it the most cost-effective? So I think that we would need a group to look at that and work with the JC's Litigation Management Committee.
If we wanted to evaluate those two programs.
So I'm wondering if, we did make the request of the council to shift this cost to the general fund, and that was denied. That was before there was an announcement that they were closing one of the regional offices. I wonder if it would be worthwhile to say we're going to fund it at this level for this year, but then take it back to the council to considering funding some portion of it, since one regional office is closed, out of their general fund and ask them to reconsider that.
This might be helpful. This is what the office provided earlier this year. So this program funds 7 positions, 5 attorneys, 2 administrative assistants. 3 of the attorneys in Sacramento two are in Burbank, and then two administrative assistants are in San Francisco. In terms of attorney functions, there's two that provide services related to transactions and business operations, two for labor employment, and one just general legal opinion.
So then that's really strange, because they have staff kind of convoluted and being funded.
Conversation about this is JC staff. Why aren't you putting that in our budget?
And IMS.
And somebody needs to answer that question, because I know separate departments are valuable and they're integrated, but it's part of the conversation we had last time, which is there's all this stuff that is where it doesn't belong because of historical funding practices that really kind of had no rhyme or reason at a point. But at some point, it's got to align because there's just not enough money. And it's so to say, well, these people are going to lose their jobs because we're not going to include it in our budget, and oh, they're valuable services that they provide statewide, because we use litigation. We use litigation funding all the time. And oh, by the way, the money comes from AOC when you're settling these cases, so you can't just eliminate that. There's got to be an infrastructure for how you manage that. But it's the conversation about where this really belongs and why the responsibility of paying it now that things are tight are with the trial courts somehow does. I mean, somebody's got to have that conversation and make some decisions, because that doesn't mean it can't happen again. It's like, well, we don't want to do it, or we can't do it, so let's just figure out how to have it come from the trial court trust fund.
Rebecca?
So I like Brian's approach. Maybe a more methodical approach is best, because if you look at the rankings on the survey, what brought their ranking down was the Cluster 4 courts, which are way up north. And so there's clearly more value placed on Clusters 1, 2, and 3 for those services or that group of people. And so, but that's not to say that they belong there. And I kind of agree. I actually kind of think the same thing goes for the audit services and some of the other things, but the fact is that maybe we start with the legal services model and throw both of those programs in and have a conversation with the right people and walk down that path and figure out how to move it over in a joint proposal to judicial counsel, you know, rather than fighting for money in front of them.
So the recommendation was to look at this to see if it's the model we wanted versus model where what we would have a firm on contract and call and ask some questions. Is that what you mean? Or
I mean, I think
else?
That we should look at all options for legal services, because right now we have these two pots of money that fund in-house for the regional these positions, and then we have this pot of money for litigation management that funds private firms. So I think we should look at both of those to say, is this the model that we want?
So should we defer this till February? But in the meantime, who should we talk to?
Well, the Litigation Management Committee, I think, would be a place to start.
I nominate Brian.
I just
question what the model would be that's more.
Well, so Brian's background.
The funding, where the funding is placed, which fund it's in is one issue, but. I don't presume to know how to. Well,
yeah. All right, we'll follow up on it.
Yeah, and is it just legal related? I'm not. Just is that litigation management related? Is that the only thing that's provided?
We understood that program.
I mean,
right?
It's more than that, though.
Yeah, some of them play the law. There's others, but what's interesting is their lawyers are much broader than what. Read. So some are out of IMF, but many are from the general fund. And I don't know how they differentiate between the two, because we call all of them.
Why don't we take a break until 3:30? We come back. Is that good?
talk.
All right, we are back from our break, and we are going to pick up where we left off. We left off on page 97 with line 21, CCPOR. And CCPOR is requesting an allocation that goes down. I think that's relative to the decisions we made last year.
Yes.
Any thoughts on CCPOR?
We certainly wouldn't want to eliminate it. Courts that are on it are reliant on it.
Yeah.
So I think we're done. Yeah.
Approve as requested?
Mm-hmm.
CCTC, which is line 25. It is going up.
Yeah.
That's 1.1.
Yep.
Okay, so let's read the light thing off.
You mean the survey results?
Page
193. In 2014, in 2015-16, we did not approve an increase they requested. And then they also freed up some encumbrances to offset funding needs. That's why we see the increase. They renegotiated the contract in June. Do all courts use the CCTC?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Well, actually, the 1.1 is a one-time reduction for one-time savings of 14-15 that now come to the contract.
Right.
So we're going to have to approve it.
Everybody
it's not
agree?
Really an increase. It's just a real, it's just fixed.
It's just their new, their new terms of their contract. Yep.
Okay. Everybody agree? Approve? Distance education?
They're going down.
I don't think we give teacher a cut. We just give them a percentage.
Yeah. I think that's
what we did last year.
I think we should. All of them that fall in with teacher. We should. That's a good idea.
And then they figure out where to cut from. That's what we did last year.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember. What was the cut last year to teacher? Do you remember?
I think Gavin Lane was teacher. It was 15%.
Oh, it was 15. Might want to
wait till the end.
Wait until the end, but say we'll do a percentage cut of the teacher programs.
Okay.
Trial Court's Transactional Assistance Program.
Are not asking for an increase, but I don't remember what they do.
I'm looking.
Letter of an arbitration, legal representation.
Oh, so it's part of the legal stuff?
Yes.
Yeah.
Sorry, but I think that should be
lumped
into the review.
Okay.
But could you do the same thing?
Legal is
proposing the procedure and say, here's the biggest percentage cut.
You could take all the legal services and say we'll do a percentage cut,
mm-hmm.
and you all figure out where you're going to take it. And that's one of them. the other one being regional office assistants. Is that what you're saying? Pardon me?
And litigation management.
Mm-hmm. And litigation management.
See,
not legal related.
Just those three then, huh?
The next one is uniform civil filing services.
Yes.
Yeah. Uniform civil fees, right? There's two staff positions coming in that are funded.
We need that.
Yeah.
And everybody uses it.
It's like oxygen.
Mm-hmm. They requested an increase?
Oh, no increase.
So we're going to approve as is. We're going to have to take a second run of this list, guys.
Yeah. The air is getting more rarefied.
Superior Court Audit Program?
We should come back on that one. I think there's a, that's one of the groups that, one of the programs that Martin's got a consultant looking at. I know I'm in a group that's going to be talking with them, so can we come back on that?
In February? Okay.
We're looking for information from Martin as a result of the consultant.
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah, there's a work group, the CEOs that are working on it, part of that group.
What other programs would that be as well? Phoenix?
No.
It's just on
that's
it.
That's standalone.
Court interpreter testing?
Yeah, we asked that last year, and right, and we were told no.
Well, Zlatko, we've had this conversation, and I don't know if Stephen has. There are restrictions on spending the appropriation.
Possible restrictions.
But there aren't restrictions on the expenditure of the fund balance,
right?
So it's coming out of the same pot. It's when you spend it, which has some restrictions.
Right, when it's appropriated. When it's a 45-45, there's a historical perspective. But when it comes back, it's a trial court trust fund.
So I recommend running this one through too. I mean, it's directly related to the provision of interpreters.
Yeah.
You cannot have interpreters without testing.
So suggesting that it come out of the reserve 45-45 fund?
Yes.
Okay.
Didn't we already discuss this?
Not the reserve funding. We didn't specifically say reserve funding.
So it's the recommendation would be fund for this year, but
no. Let's recommend.
You're saying take it out. GPTF software support as opposed to an interpreter allocation.
So shift it to the trust fund?
No, to the reserve funding of the 45-45.
Which is the trial court trust fund.
Right. But we don't want it to come out of the trial court trust fund. Right, right.
Do we have authority to do that?
Budgetary authority? Yeah, but I mean, it's an issue. Well, you could recommend it, but you'd have to talk to the language access folks about that, just like we're doing about this other issue.
I'm more than happy to join to that group.
Yeah, yep, me too.
List of items.
Yep.
Okay.
Where is it, though?
Line 13. I'm
trying to see how much money it is.
Line 13 on the
day. Yeah.
What's our total of two?
143.
48.
I'm not keeping track, but have we even hit this?
I think it's
we're over 200,000.
10,000.
No, we've got 143 plus 60, so that's 223, 231.
I have.
So you have 20,000 on that. So, Cottrell, we need to sit together. We have 20,000 on TV.
Right.
60,000 on electronic form.
Right.
143 and 8.
Yes.
Also,
so I have 60,000, 20,000, and 8,000?
and 143.
Oh, okay.
And didn't we have a savings on PCPOR?
No.
Oh, because it was already built into the savings.
Oh, okay.
But on line 18, we talked about cutting $70,000 also on the procurement.
Did we agree to that, Glucko?
Well, we haven't filled the position, so
okay.
Current year. So it's not a cut, it just is a reflecting the savings.
Okay, so $70,000 on line 18. Right. Okay. Court procurement.
Hey, Mayor.
So what are we doing with 15? Court interpreter testing?
We're going to recommend it go to the 4545 reserve funding in trial court contract.
And okay. The next one is Trial Court Labor Relations Academies and Forums.
Liz, and, what do we get? Are 11 through 14 on all seizure?
No, that's very HR. That's line 19.
Sorry, I'm looking at the
$25,000.
Yeah. What did they get last year?
$25,000.
They must have one annual thing that they do.
Yeah, and, you know, they haven't asked for an increase, and I think most courts send someone, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I don't think it's ranked high, too.
Yeah,
yeah.
It is. So we'll keep going.
Approved?
Yeah.
Essential court management education.
So those part of that.
Is that seizure?
That's seizure.
Yes.
Seizure faculty.
Yes.
And
11.
Litigation management.
In 9. The little litigation management would be part of that. Brian's going to look at.
Okay. Statewide multidisciplinary education. Is that seizure?
No, this is actually CFCC. This is Beyond the Bench program.
Oh.
This is actually related to CFCC educational program, 67,000.
What line is it on our new handout?
A 2, I believe.
CFCC educational program?
Yeah.
67,000. It's Beyond the Bench?
Yeah. And that's actually a very valuable program for juvenile.
Are paying justice partners to attend, though? I mean, if it's so valuable, why don't they pay you again?
Yeah.
I've always wondered that. I have no objection to hosting it or have it paid
well,
for.
I'm kind of sharing it.
Yeah.
I mean, I found out last week, a couple weeks ago, how many of our other justice
yeah.
partners
we are paying
for. And, you know, we've been going to these same people and say, well, are you going to help us pay for CCPOR? And they tell us,
no.
Sorry, no thanks.
Yeah. We're justice partners as long as we're providing. It's interesting how we're not justice partners when we're asking.
I don't think the cost of the justice partners are covered from IMF. I'm pretty sure we should check, but I think that's covered from our general
fund.
Right. I imagine that $67,000 is all it takes to run that program.
Yeah, I would agree with you.
But that's a really interesting point, Stephen. I'm so glad you raised that. So if the general fund is paying for the justice partners, why would not this whole program be paid for general fund and stop paying for the justice partners? Because that's kind of this whole thing where I've been frustrated because we don't see all the checkbooks for the programs that support trial courts. You know, thank you for raising that.
Well, actually, I'm not sure that it pays for it. It does pay for any justice partners that come from trial court, but I'm not sure if it broadly pays for all justice partners. I would think it doesn't, but I don't know.
But you see my point. There's these accounts that pay for services for the trial court, but we don't get to see them. But if we said, no, we don't think we should, then this could be paid there, and now we've got this free.
Do we know that it pays for our justice partners?
It does. I know it does.
But we don't know if it comes out of the IMS.
ESG had grants that were provided for.
And maybe it is a grant, Jose. That
I don't know. That is the case this year? I'm not sure it was.
We could do a percentage reduction equivalent to what
procedure takes when we figure out what that is. Huh? Well, Cedar took 15%
last
year. What's Cedar's budget? Well, we have to end more.
I think it's 1.37.
What is that?
I think it's 1,307,000, if I remember correctly, but I can tell you now for Cedar.
1.37 is Cedar. Okay.
For 15-16, their budget was 1,202,000.
Updates for NJO,
Sure, everything. It's not a lot of money. For what they do, it's not much money in the big ticket.
When you think about it, all of us who either need a class or need to send somebody, it's not really very available at all. And it, you know, I feel uncomfortable because last year I remember them saying, okay, we've kind of thought it through, but we're kind of cutting bone now.
They were very good about coming back with some suggestions. So last year, I remember them as being probably the best as far as reevaluating their process and coming back with suggestions. Yeah.
Procedures. Procedures.
All right. So we'll figure out a percentage as we.
We got to be careful with Cedar because really it's what's happened now is they've. You're only giving certain programs, at least at the judicial front, every other year rather than yearly, subject matter area, et cetera, et cetera. So just they've been cut quite a bit. So.
The good news is we're not at 2.3 anymore because we've got 300,000.
We're at
2 million.
Mm-hmm.
So we can't rely on CEDAR to do a percentage cut with what's left. Well, there isn't enough money in CEDAR.
I just got a response from CFCC. They told me that the cost of court travel and lodging is paid for by the IMF to attend Beyond the Bench and some of the other educational programs.
Okay.
But in terms of justice partners, they only pay the registration. They pay registration for Beyond the Bench. We don't. It's not paid out of the IMF, or it seems like even the general fund. They pay their own cost to attend the Beyond the Bench program.
Including their hotel costs?
I will ask them.
Okay.
But,
so do we pay any of the costs?
For judges?
Justice.
Or court staff? Out of the IMF? Oh, I don't know. That's what we want to know is do we pay?
Any,
does the IMF pay for any of it?
No, IMF does not pay for any justice costs. But I'll ask
general.
In general. Okay.
So when we get to the top, I want to talk about some that we've skipped over. But I'm just going to put that we're going to do a percentage reduction to statewide multidisciplinary education. Budget focus training and meetings. Is this your folks?
No,
we're cutting ourselves?
If 90% of the budget advisor can be 10% of their budget related conference calls and training.
So you're saying we should have more conference calls?
Where is it on the attachment here that shows the amount?
16. 50,000.
You should take a percentage.
Let's take a percentage. What's the percentage?
Well, let's figure that out in a moment.
No more lunches.
No more free lunches.
No, we didn't have coffee.
We didn't have free lunches.
Yeah.
All right. Telecommunication support, we're waiting until February, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Our Treasury Services cash management. What does that do?
Pay your bills, make sure you have money in the bank to pay your bills.
The
chalkboard?
Yeah.
Yeah,
we need that.
We need that. Yeah, the sad thing is so many of these are just, they're central office functions. In any other state, they're part of the State Court Administrator's Office.
Are they requesting an increase?
No, I don't think they're requesting an increase.
No increase.
Huh? Should we approve at the last year's level? Should we?
Same thing as salary adjustment. Same number of staff, same three people.
Reserve, maintain.
Yep, maintain.
What? Maintain it at last year's level?
Or whatever they request.
All right, no. approve. I would approve. I mean, it's the same people, right? So
yeah.
they have to be funded. You can't
yeah.
say.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess you could furlough those people for 2 days or something,
okay.
or you know, a week,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, right.
But,
no one's fair at that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Approve it. Requested amount. Statewide support for self-help programs.
Line 7, $100,000. This year estimated. Next year, $100,000.
So, what's the difference between this and self-help centers?
Yeah, this is different. This is, might be forms. I think this is
yeah,
forms.
I haven't
talked about this.
This is forms for self-help.
No, I thought the forms were on line 5.
Yeah,
we're on line 6, right? We're on line 5. So we've already done it. We took 60 away.
So the description is that online self-help center has over 4,000 pages of content in English and Spanish, as well as hundreds of links to other free legal resources.
So this is a website.
It's a website.
So this is not the form. This is their website with the links on the council that we all link to.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Uh-huh. We all have links on our website.
We all have links to it. What's the email? 60. We took it away, and I think we're going.
We took 60 way down on line 29.
No, we took 60.
5.
Yeah. Wow. No, we can't do that.
There is a place for vacation.
Going backwards.
Here we are.
Carol, add 60 back. We're under 300 from line 5.
We're going 5.
Line 5 is this. Line 5 is the software app electronic form.
Yeah, but where is it on here?
I thought that was at 107. It's the description of 107. That's
correct.
Different than
software.
Yeah.
Oh, it is.
Description 107.
So, is there some reason we couldn't do a percentage of reduction? There's a how many FTEs do they have? They don't have any.
Yeah, because they're writing the website for the general information that we link our self-help to. It's not the form, right?
Well, it's all kinds of.
So who does the maintenance? Is there a staff person that's going to do this?
I understand that. It's got pretty positive comments on the
yeah.
as far as
yeah.
So fund as requested?
Yeah. Question. So I'm going through this list on the four on the this list, and unless I'm mistaken, there's 4 of them that are not on the survey list. And that is Justice Corps, number 14.
It's gone.
We eliminated it.
The funding's gone.
But what else did you find?
But it's listed.
Yeah.
Oh.
It's listed here. Oh, I see. It's zero across
it's
the table.
It's zero. So it's
and then so Adobe's the same way. And then jury is not on here. Both jury items 27 and 32 I don't see on this.
Jury's just 32?
27 and 32, lines 27 and 32 are not on the survey list, just so that we're encompassing everything in our discussion.
Okay.
Okay.
They're reimbursed.
Oh, they're, okay. They're restricted. Okay.
Well, the jury system
improvement one, that's the restricted one, right? The
other
one is the grant. The other one is
okay.
the grant program,
right. okay.
which is not restricted. Is that correct? It was suspended the 1 year.
It's like interpreters, right?
I'm told
for actual costs, and then if there's reserve left at the end, you figure it out.
No, not the jury reimbursement. This is the jury grant program.
System
improvement.
Applications.
So the next one is Phoenix.
Well, there was an increase request, but
the number's incorrect.
Right, so we can lower that one to the 13,885.
Say it again.
For Phoenix, for 16-17, it's no longer 14,004,000. it's been revised down to $13,885,300. I think it's $118,000 difference.
118? 119? Okay, good. We'll take that saving. And the cost increase is staff?
There's no additional staff.
Yeah,
500,000 staff costs for the 5% increase, and then there's the money we encumbered in the prior year budget.
Got it, credit contract.
That's another 500 and something thousand for that.
So I have a question. 5% increase, is that what everybody got?
It's the 2.5.
Oh, 2.5, okay.
It was just a description.
Got it. Okay. So the 3.5 is probably bring it. And this is what... So for the February meeting, we'll start looking at the HR component.
Right, breaking that out.
Yeah.
And I'm also going to look at the expenditures and coverages on here to try to figure out what the real number was.
Excellent.
So I'm hoping to find you more money. If
thank
you.
If
it's all accurate, there's money there.
Yeah.
I don't think it's accurate.
Okay.
I'll look at
Charlie. No, I could be wrong.
Okay.
Judicial performance defense insurance. I made a motion last year, and I will do it again today, to eliminate the funding, and judges can pay for it themselves.
What line is it? I'm trying to find it.
31.
The question is, though, I think there's a master insurance policy.
There is. Yeah.
I wonder if there's an ability for, if we know when we're going to eliminate it, to say, look, if you want to be included in the insurance policy, here's... pay for it, but you would still probably need somebody to manage it.
Is this what causes judges to perform their ethics training? Is this,
yeah.
So you're going to have the trade-off of saying, oh, because the judges will say, all right, screw you, I'm not going to do my ethics training. I'm just, right?
Yeah.
We say you have to do your ethics, then you get insurance free, but I don't know what it costs each of us a year. That's a good question.
How much are they asking for?
How many judges are there?
I just did something.
Oh.
It's about 1,800 judges.
If
that's
plus or
minus, it's
$500,000.
I don't know if the overhead is, but
you know,
if that's the
cost
of policy, it's $500,000.
So the problem is, I think if it's insurance, strong changes have to get all the judges at that rate.
Yep.
So right. If half the judges say, I'm not going to do it, I think you're going to be in trouble.
Yeah.
It'll vary every year, right? Trying to retire during your federal term.
Does it only cover CJP or does it also cover law?
I think it's let me just bring up this issue, and I think, you know, it's a noble gesture on Judge Earl's part to bring this particular issue up, but there was an item that was raised before the council a couple of years ago when I was there, and it was to simply defund the Judicial Assistance Program, which was very rarely ever used.
Oh, yeah, I was there, too. Yep.
There was enormous blowback on this issue, and that was a small, very minimal issue. This is huge. So do we want to poke the sleeping dog? I mean, clearly it's going to be awkward, and it does serve a purpose.
Back then, when we were the president of CJA, we got killed. I'm absolutely blistered by letters.
I don't disagree that it's valuable, but I think judges should pay for this themselves, or they could, but the problem is they might choose not to, and then where are we?
Well, Jim Herman again, I mean, there's a lot of questions. I mean, this might be something, a direction we might want to move, but, you know, a lot of questions about, you know, who the carrier is that carries the policy, how, you know, what the price points would be per judge in order to participate in the program, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, it's
like your program where we have
and start conversations about maybe doing it a little different way, because I think you present it, I don't think the Judicial Council is going to approve it. It's something that's going to happen. And if there is some negative impact because we brought it up in the first place, that might not be a good thing.
I'm just wondering if maybe JC staff could, I mean, we keep hearing how CJP, really, when you drill way down, they really don't discipline very many judges. And maybe we could just get back to the carrier and say, can you give us a better rate? I mean, is there something if we're, how long we've been paying and so what rate have we been paying, and could you just, I don't know, I'm just trying to think outside the box as far as, because I tend to agree. I think if, when it goes up to the JC level, they're going to say NCJA is going to barbecue. And Judge Earl, if anybody's going to do it, I will. I don't think you should. I mean, you should cover from the chair of take back, I think.
Okay.
But, yeah.
Wow.
Right.
Generous.
My understanding is that Carrie did increase the rate, so we renegotiated with them to go back down to the to a lower rate. I don't know if there's any room to go down further to retain it in future years.
Yes.
But.
Yeah, maybe this would be set to add more work for our litigation. But I think would they go ahead and change it?
Yeah, we can, yeah.
Just heard from GSC staff that Justice Partners have to pay for their own travel, lodging, food, and registration fees.
Okay.
The general fund does not cover any of those costs. Any other costs.
Okay. And the last one on our list is self-help centers.
I think there's small hesitation.
I don't know, a percentage reduction?
I don't know.
And we've gotten...
Okay, with percentage reduction.
Well, then we gotta make another run through the list. What?
Yeah.
What's the bottom line number that we're trying to cut 2.3 million from?
We have to look at the last page. Scenario 4, 16-17. That is
2.3.
2.3 is what we're trying to cut. Our spending problem is the $10 million underneath. We're overspending.
There is the jury management grant program that we could suspend or eliminate.
And that's not on here?
I'm just asking overall. We're cutting jury management from what?
$75 million.
Yeah. So that's 0.03%, I think.
Because we cut so much last year, you know, there's nothing left. Come on, in all your wisdom, where do we get 2 million?
Couple things to attention. In terms of attachment for A1, we've missed three programs because they weren't part of the survey.
Okay.
So one of them is the jury management system, and that's covered by the jury royalties. That was a decision made last year, approved by the council.
Line 27.
And that's line 27. So that's why it's not in the survey, but it's funded from jury royalty revenues.
So it does. So that's the wash.
That's the wash, yeah.
Okay.
Also, line 132, the jury system.
Yeah.
That also was not in the survey because that's also funds, that's also being funded from the jury royalty revenue.
Okay.
And then finally, if you look at line 20, the Adobe lifecycle, that was not part of the survey, and the IT office is suggesting that be rolled into the enterprise policy planning, $141,000.
So it's in there under a
different line?
Right.
It's in the enterprise policy planning line. That's,
was 141
23 on the passing 4A1 and on the survey line 23 31 it got line number 31.
Sherry, I just need some improvement. I could be wrong, but if scenario 1 was $88 million in expenditures, and we need to spend another $2 million. That's 2.2% of the $88 million. I haven't taken out the ones that we reduced. I haven't been self-help, but which is 5 million. But it's a relatively small percentage across the board, it looks to me. Now, somebody who worked at the leadership probably just looked at the half of it.
Doing it the pro rata that Brian suggested?
Way back when. But I still think that you have to drill down more on some of this tech stuff that we were talking about earlier and get some better answers. That's where all the money is.
Mm-hmm. So
scenario four is the one that you lease,
right?
Correct.
That's
the one. Correct. Scenario one is they purchase everything.
That's
so
right.
Scenario four should be
$73.74 million. Yeah, so it'll be a larger percentage.
But you're right, if you took
4%.
Some of these cuts away from $74 million, but the $74 million includes the increases that everything has.
Right, that
yeah.
you can't.
So
and you've got contractual amounts in some of them.
So you say, we'll give you everything. And then pro rata, now that you're giving everything, now figure out a way for everybody to cut 2%.
Yeah.
And then you're done.
Yeah, I don't know if there's a lot that could be. When I look down the list, the CCPOR is all contractual at this point. There's probably nothing there to cut.
Some of them, I don't know how many of these.
Or
contracts.
Right. You can do that.
Contracts or staffing.
Exactly. Well, maybe one of the things we want staff to do is then to tell us what's discretionary and what's
contractual.
And
And I'm hoping if we have the information back by February on the enterprise license, if there is some money there, that could be a big chunk.
How would like our IT managers also look at that?
Yeah.
Like they did for the land rent.
I think that's a great idea.
To do what?
To have the CIOs look at the enterprise. Well, now Martin's consultants are doing that.
Okay.
So that's who's going to come back and tell us. He's looking at with that with the survey and with other information.
Although Jody said that she may not have that information by February. So,
even if we looked at them and found that there were some that we couldn't touch because of their staffing or whatever, you could, they were still talking about 2%. It may be 2.3% for those that are discretionary that you could cut a little bit. So it might not, still might not be so bad.
So, but if we did do the percentage, then we're addressing the obvious problem, and it may be that in February we're able to reevaluate based on the numbers and based on any feedback from the consultant. And, we may be able to shift it a little bit. At least we're moving forward rather than leaving an existing deficit in place.
Well, let me ask you. There are two items that we haven't touched, 32 and 33. Is that because we're still talking about
The ITMS and V3?
Right.
That's because there's a BCP that's gone out, and we want to wait to get information back to see the results of that or at least get an update from
So if that fails,
then we have to.
Then are those two line items able to sustain a $2.3 million reduction? I mean, 2.3%, whatever reduction.
I think that would be something we'd have to, talk about. I think that, Well, you remember what happened last year.
Right. No, I mean,
that's
so what ended up happening is all of these other programs that are like self-help, $5 million expense, right? And so that's going to end up having to take a bigger chunk of the cut. And that particular service is something that is an access issue.
But all 58 core twos.
Yeah. Well, but in varying degrees, right?
Yeah. Well, what we've done right now, I think, is we've kind of done a hybrid. Is we've picked out some that we've said, like self-help, that we're going to maintain at the current level. We've picked out some that absolutely are going to maintain. We've eliminated, I think, two and or three. And then some of them, and a large number of them, we've put maybe they're going to take a percentage reduction. And then we're waiting back on a handful for February, all IT, almost all IT. So right now we're kind of doing a hybrid of a pro rata.
It doesn't look like we can do a whole lot more until we have answers to all those other questions.
I don't think so. I had a question. Since we have carved out some for a percentage decrease, and some of those are CFCC and CEJR, what about the trial court labor relations academies and forums? Is that one where we want a percentage reduction?
Yes.
Okay.
they wouldn't do anything.
Do you know if the consultants are looking at the cost of Phoenix? Is there anything we can do? When you're looking at the big line items, that's a big, you know, the big ones are Phoenix, Judicial Defense Fund, the Lanwan, Enterprise, and Self-Help. Those are the big ones. You know, if they're looking at...
In regards to Phoenix, what they're looking at is the SAP contract. And is there a way... We actually have an RFP out now to hire a vendor to come in and negotiate
a lower rate.
SAP contract, if possible. The first part of the RFP is to evaluate which finance can be reduced. And then the second part would be to help us negotiate if we can.
Is it a year to year? Or are you... Is this the timing perfect because you're renegotiating?
No, we own... an enterprise perpetual license,
okay.
And every year we pay maintenance.
Got it.
And so the idea is if we were to go renegotiate the purchase and reduce products or something, then there would be an upfront cost. Would the maintenance go down enough that at some point we'd have a break even where we're actually saving money going forward? But there would be no immediate savings because you have to buy a new license
and
to
then
reduce your
forward.
Maintenance going forward.
Can I ask a question on that?
Judicial defense. Is there a copay of some sort?
No.
So if there's a copay, if you use it, the rate would probably go down a little bit, right? And it wouldn't necessarily impact everybody. I mean, is that a...
I don't know if it's structured that way. That'd be up to the carrier to decide if they want to provide a copay or a deductible.
Or deductible. Right, deductible.
I guess, I mean, if somebody... I just don't know.
Well, I mean, if you have a deductible policy, it's always going to be cheaper than there's when you're right about it. I mean, that may be the answer to the fact that it serves so few people. And I'm sure that once somebody is actually in front of BJP paying some portion of their legal costs, it would be too much
to ask.
Who would we talk to about that? About trying to...
Legal?
Yeah,
we talked to the legal division on that.
Okay.
I'm drawing a blank on who's Mark Jacobson?
Yeah.
It is Mark Jacobson. I can email him. Do you want to try to
Email
him to talk about it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But you have something. You might encourage better behavior by judges if they really have to pay out.
Graduated scale to go to hearings.
You know, preliminary
investigation.
359. 359?
Oh,
359,
900.
Yeah. 360. I'm just going to round up because it makes me happy. Say 360,000. Is there any wiggle room on CCTC in terms of having them take a reduction? Anything else you
all
want to talk about?
I was wondering if there's anything more we can do today. We had a lot of open items that we're going to come back
to. I'm not sure there is.
Huh?
I'm not sure there is.
February.
I think we have a lot going on and some homework, and that we'll have to get together in February. So I can tell you the kind of proposed dates for February. Let my co-chair look at them and make sure she doesn't have any conflict with any of them before.
What dates?
So February 9th, 10th, or 11th?
No, I can't do the 11th.
Okay. The 12th is a holiday. Then the 15th is a holiday. So then either the 16th or 17th.
Okay.
I think we can get it done one day.
I think we can get it done one day. How about the 9th of February?
Yeah. I was sharing first call.
John?
Oh, fine. Yeah, I'll be here. Futures Commission.
Is it just your hunting? Your
no, no. It's a public session.
And then February 9th?
Oh, you might. Is it in San Francisco? What time? Do you know what time, David?
10:03.
Up here?
In San Francisco.
San Francisco? No, I'll definitely answer again. The temps would be really hard.
Yep.
I'll have to check.
A week earlier.
Second to early.
We can go a week before, or first week of February.
February 2nd.
We didn't check availability.
I still have to dabble through December, right?
Yeah.
First
we can go the first week in February.
Colin?
Sorry. Do you
think we'll have
the data that covers
data separately?
Yeah.
Hello, the 4th.
Thursday,
the
4th?
It's a
Wednesday.
Oh, that's
right. I'm working with the data. Sorry.
Thursday, the
4th.
Okay.
Thursday, yep, that works.
All right. Yeah, it would be again 10 to. Like 3 or 4, whenever we can finish it.
Okay.
We'll have to check space availability. So let's tentatively, if you could hold the 4th and the 9th.
We couldn't do the 8th.
You could come down to LA. I'd be happy to host y'all.
Okay.
Let's do it.
There's also
going to blow our budget.
There's also Monday the 8th.
Well,
let's check space availability. So the 4th, 8th, or 9th? Except David can't join us if we do it the 9th, so.
Maybe the 4th or 8th.
You'd A deal, too. It's 8th and 9th.
Oh, it is?
So maybe the 4th.
Actually, here's the thing. The 8th is my section, so the 9th actually, I can skip out.
Well, so the 4th or the 9th?
Yeah.
Okay.
4th or the 9th, and we'll check space availability.
Do you have a preference, Sacramento, San Francisco?
Well, I have a preference, but I'm sure. And David has a preference.
Sacramento.
But
it's not Bergen or Sacramento.
No.
All right.
Anything else?
Can we start tomorrow?
Exactly. Boy,
but
what are you doing?
It looks like we don't need tomorrow. I appreciate you setting it aside for us.
And reserving a room and all that.
Right. A car.
We are going to end our meeting and sign off on our meeting.